It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are, off and running, on this fifth day of January, 2021, quite possibly one of the most important days in modern American history, and we're here to, lucky us, witness it. Yeah. Hi, I'm Robin, and it is Trump Panic Tuesday on the horn. And just by way of keeping up with things, that means that there are precisely two more Trump Panic Tuesdays, after which it will go back to Titanic Tuesday. And your regularly scheduled broadcast. Yes, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks go out for our fifth day of the month PayPal subscribers. Thank you very kindly getting us started today as partial sponsors of the program. Well, thank you to Kenda in Missouri. Thank you to Lauren in the far frozen reaches of Alberta. Thank you to Roberto and to Kevin in Colorado Springs and to James in Illinois. Thank you to Bernice, Batty Boop. Thank you to Hung Like Jesus. Thank you all very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. And thank you. Thank you to Jeremy in Vermont for being first past the post and getting us started. That puts us at $275 to finish the evening because we were able to finish a little bit to the good yesterday, thanks to challenges and matching grants from Gary, Labor Man, and Chris in Germany, and Ralphs and Steve in New York. Okie doke. So I'm thrilled. And hopefully we'll just keep up with things and hit the middle of the week and the first week of a new year and still not be in a hole. That's devoutly to be wished and very, very thoroughly exciting. So it is Trump-tanic Tuesday. You know, this is the day that we celebrate manifestations of monumental, titanic, as in full speed ahead to that there iceberg, right-wing Republican intellect, or whatever passes for it. The breaking news as we go, as airtime approached, was, of course, that once again, life imitates art. Once again, a real life event, this time the shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin, was predicted by none other than Richard Pryor. Is it? And so apparently in Kenosha, Wisconsin, it is okay to shoot an African-American man in the back, try to kill him, because, well, the rest of the law enforcement community will have your back after you shoot an African-American man in the back. And there won't be any consequences. Hooray! Rather disgusting, isn't it? Well, yes, as a matter of fact. It is. I had a note following up on yesterday's program. I had a note from our pal, Reverbo, who asked, were you floating out the idea that the peace signed by the 10 defense secretaries may be a message in reverse, that the military might be inclined to help keep Trump in the White House? That's it's entirely a possibility. They were warning that it should not happen, because I'm afraid they were watching it happen in real time. And the triggering event, and of all things, Richard B. Big Time Dick Cheney before he Dick Shoe was apparently the driving force behind that letter. Go figure. Reverbo continued and said, meanwhile, send all possum power to Georgia today. We can't stand four more years of nothing. News of that phone call to Raffensperger may be just what we need to bring it home. One hopes so. I'll be looking for some, maybe a little input from the Georgia contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation. I took one for the team. Really? And I watched, because the orangutan wasn't even haranguing by the time we were off air last night. So, like an idiot, I kept watching. Uy, uy, uy. And I've seen a bunch of those, his clan rallies over the last four miserable benighted years. But I don't think I've ever seen one quite as crazy as that. Eventually, he invited Kelly Attila the Hun Offler Waffler Loffler up to speak, and he let her speak for about 2.5 minutes. You know, Trump women. And I couldn't, she had a baseball cap pulled down low over her eyes because somebody must have pointed out the fact that she's got that one eye that faces forward and the other one that looks back over her shoulder like she's some sort of lizard, which she probably is. But she had it pulled down so that you couldn't see the one that was, you know, I don't know, looking off towards Sarah Hasselbeck's sandbags. But she made a big announcement. She made a big coming out last night. Well, I'm going to vote to overturn the election, too. Good for you, Kelly. Yay. Dumbass. So that earned her some big maggot points. And I did see a couple of people wearing masks. Emery and Marveline apparently showed up. And they were wearing masks to maybe try to keep from getting the Rona from all the unmasked maggots around them. But anyway, I dropped a note to Brother Bishop Steve in Georgistan and said, you probably need to stay inside for about the next 2 weeks after that thing that went down. So, but I'll be looking for maybe some weather reports from people like Steve. And if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room, well, pop on by headon.live, click on Chat Room, and you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Original Sailor Chick and Roy the Hoghead and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran Chat Room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space and become Man Cave. And he is capably assisted by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve, from Georgistan. Is it raining there? Is it cold? Is it gray? Is it shitty? Are the maggots staying away from the polls? Are they disincentivized? Are they demotivated? It's probably too much to think that 3 million votes are all Warnock and Ossoff votes, but one can still dare to hope. Yeah. I don't know. And by the way, I haven't seen. There it is. There it is. January 5th, purge Republicans. Robin! On this day, I cannot help but wonder how many people in this country don't have any idea that there is an election happening today, not to mention the significance of the election and how it will shape this country. I was thrilled that Joe Biden mentioned yesterday that $2,000 a month will not happen, nor will much of anything else if Ossoff and Warnock are not elected. I was glad to see Kamala in Georgia also, but couldn't help wonder where the hell were all the other prominent Democrats? Well, naturally, Jeffrey is here. Points out,
yes, Joey and I have been down there four times. Did Obama even show up once, considering Biden was his vice president?
Yes, he did.
Seriously, you would have thought maybe somebody like Chuck Schumer might have shown up and stumped for Ossoff and Warnock.
No, you don't want Chuck Schumer stumping for Ossoff and Warnock, Joey and Giraffe. No, you don't. No, that's like having Urkel as your hype man if you're a wannabe rap star, okay? Or does Schumer just not really give a shit who's in charge of the Senate just as long as his coffers continue to be filled because he's in bed with big business, i.e. corporate America? If Ossoff and Warnock do manage to win these seats, will Schumer shuttle the filibuster or just continue to shuttle around with Wall Street? Jeffrey is very sullen and serious today because of the ramifications of this election. Perplexed, even.
Wait a minute, Robin. Did you say that was a ticker machine in Tuscumbia in 1980?
Well, no, it wasn't a ticker. It was a teletype. A real big, heavy one with, like, the same thing as typewriter keys. And ding! Yeah, that kind of thing.
Well, holy Helen Keller, who would have thought little old Tuscumbia, Alabama, the little town with scum in the middle, would have had a news ticker in town? Hell, Robin, were there televisions in Tuscumbia back in the 1980s, too?
There most assuredly were, and they were CRTs. You know, Jeffrey really makes a good point. Where were people like Jim Clyburn, you know, the guy who practically installed Biden as president during the primary? Today, Jeffrey and I are just in no mood for a bunch of bullshit. Both Jeffrey and I have worked very hard the past 6 weeks, and people such as Liz and Marietta have worked a hell of a lot harder than both Jeffrey and me put together. Jeffrey is by far the hardest-working giraffe in politics, and he deserves every cowbell he receives, and some that he does not receive. There's still more grief going on over the great cowbell controversy that begins 2021. Having said that, I told Jeffrey to stop complaining about the lack of cowbells because you're starting to sound like Donald Trump complaining to Brad Raffensperger. Ooh, that's cold. Obviously, somebody who's jealous of your success is mad because you were getting too many cowbells, two or three cowbells a night, and complained to the artist formerly known as Bob. By the way, Robin, how in hell did not the artist formerly known as Bob and will be a princely sum not a cat get a cowbell? What the fuck? All right, there you go. Yeah, it looks like you come a long way with this turning into a woman thing, as you've already reached menopause.
God damn it.
Jeffrey interrupts.
Yes, there seems to be a conspiracy, as they're now purging my cowbells. I wonder if that Raffensperger guy, purger guy from Georgia was in on it. The next thing we know, Raffensperger will be trying to purge giraffes, and then it'll be known as...
Wait for it. Oh, you know, he couldn't resist.
He'll be known as Giraffensperger.
Ouch.
Besides, Joe, you're the one who says that you're motivated by the cowbells to contribute to the show. Jeez, Robin, that's a nice little show you got there. Hate to see something happen to it.
Oh, really? The giraffe is mobbed up now? All right, that's enough. At this point, you really are sounding like Donald Trump. Jesus, people are going to think we're mobsters or something. Besides, you're the one who jumps around like Pavlov's giraffe whenever you get a cowbell and your antlers punch a bunch of holes in the ceiling when you bob your head up and down. Or should have said robbing your head up and down. It's going to be like this, is it? For a while, I reckon. So are we supposed to feel bad for Brad Raffensperger because Trump is harassing him, stalking him? You're an asshole, Raffensperger, and you deserve whatever harassment you're receiving, save the harassing of your children. A child should not be subject to harassment because their parents are assholes. But you were right there with Brian Kemp and totally complicit in the theft of the election when Stacey Abrams had the governorship, very likely stolen from her during the last election. Raffensperger, you are a low-life scumball mobster who helped rig an election. You have no morals or decency, and to feel the need to record Trump's phone in order to protect yourself. Ratzenfink, you've behaved criminally in the past to allow Kemp in the governor's mansion, and now you'll do nothing to help Trump cheat his way back into the White House. Trump would not be harassing you if he knew you had ethics and were not kicking hundreds of thousands of people off the voting rolls and closing down voting precincts in order to create hour-long lines that most people cannot afford to wait in.
However, Trump knows who you really are, and that's why he's harassing you to help him cheat his way back into the White House. Here's Jeffrey again. He'd like to address the governor about his address.
Camp, you should leave right now. Don't bother cleaning up the place. We'd rather have it unkempt.
Ooh, that's just awful. Finally, then there's Perfidu. Who conveniently claims he has the Rona right before Trump comes to town. That's interesting. Wait a minute. I thought the coronavirus was a hoax, so why would David Chicken Little Perfidu care about something that doesn't exist? Yeah, that's why Kelly Offler Waffler Loffler got invited up on the stage yesterday and David Perfidu didn't, because he was home quarantining from the Rona. Oh no, I'm sorry, President Trump. I can't come out tonight. I just washed my coronavirus and I can't do a thing with it. So how do the Republicans reconcile the fact that Purdue has a virus that doesn't exist? This is what I mean when I speak of people not critically thinking. How do they vote for a candidate that claims he has a virus that doesn't exist? And, well, Jeffrey's hopeful.
Yes, after tonight, Purdue's political career will be cooked and he can go work at the Big Chicken in Marietta, Georgia.
Now, why you want to do that to the Big Chicken? It's a cultural icon in the northwest of Atlanta. It's a hell of a thing to do. Yeah, maybe we can have some plucked Purdue and chicken legs Loffler later this week. By the way, Chick-fil-A is always hiring. Yesterday, Perfidu was conveniently outraged at the fact that somebody would record a sitting president. Again, there are the Republicans completely ignoring the issue of this president is committing felonies on this tape recording. And believe me, citizens of this country, Mitch McConnell and the entire Senate will be ignoring us if just one of this peach tree right-wing parrots ends up in the Senate, back in the Senate. And so this has been Joey's Journal for Tuesday, the 5th day of January, 2021, with Giraffe looking to purge all the Republicans in Georgia. There's a $25 Purge Republicans challenge, and that would knock us down to $225 to finish the evening. Thank you for the challenge, Jeffrey and Giraffe. And we will hopefully see that met in fairly short order. Darlene pointing out menopause, M-E-N hyphen O hyphen pause, or probably manopause. That was a good one, LOL. I agree. And Tom in sunny San Rafael says, Giraffe? Would that make him a giraffin's perjurer? Oh dear, it's going to be one of those nights, isn't it? I think I already said that, but that's okay. Cowbell for Joey, you're already on your way to menopause, or are four cowbells enough for that silly stuff, Giraffe Robin? Think I answered my own question, but that was of restaurant quality. Yes, it was, and Darlene noted it as well, Billable. And that's right, Billable had saved a challenge for the beginning of the week. And so that's on there, too. I think it was $25, wasn't it, Billable? So there's $50 in challenges on the table, and that would take us down to $175 if they're met. So thank you, and thank you for the reminder. As far as cowbells are concerned, Lee in New York says, if anyone deserves a hearty cowbell, it's Joey and Giraffe for the unrelenting support of Ossoff and Warnock. Thank you for the support of Georgia, the Senate, and the nation. Indeed, indeed, and that's worthy of a jingle. A little bit of a follow-up to the maggot lawyer we were talking about last night, Cleta Mitchell. According to Business Insider, she has decided to absent herself from the law firm in which she was a full partner. One thinks that that was a matter of trying to maybe save a little face so as not to be, you know, because when you're a partner and you get canned by your other partners,
it really doesn't look good for you going forward. No, not at all. So, well, you can either jump or we'll push you. That's kind of how that works. Oh, and yes, Billable says the challenge is called the Fuck 2020 and Don't Linger at the Door Challenge. So the Purge Republican Challenge and the Fuck 2020 and Don't Linger at the Door Challenges are both on the table. And the sooner we meet them, the sooner we will be well on our way to making things considerably, well, optimistic for this brand new year. Now, where all do we go? Where do we begin in among these many maggots, these many Trump-tanic intellects? Because, lo, they are legion. In a word, there's a bunch of them. Let's see here. How about Pennsylvania? Where a guy named Jim Brewster of Allegheny County won, and there's really no question about it, his election to the Pennsylvania State Senate. But the Republicans in the Senate of the state of Georgia, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, I don't have Georgia on my mind. Ooh, wait, I should write a song. The Republicans there have refused to seat a democratically elected Democrat in the Pennsylvania Senate because the maggot who was running against him and got his ass handed to him, a little creep by the name of Nicole Zicarelli, has asked the court to throw out 311 mail-in ballots from Allegheny County that lacked a handwritten date on the outer ballot envelope. The state's Supreme Court has already ruled. They have already held Nicole Zicarelli to be defeated and Brewster to be the winner. So now she's filed in federal court, which actually kind of lacks jurisdiction. But the maggots in the Pennsylvania Senate said, no, we're not going to seat. We're not going to seat Senator Brewster. And so then they moved to swear in all the new Democratic senators. And, well, Lieutenant Governor Fetterman stepped in and said, hey, he's the certified winner of his district. And the Republicans said, nuh-uh. Which led Jim Brewster, in turn, to step back and ask for all the other Democratic senators to be sworn in. He didn't want to shit on their celebration by virtue of the fact that the maggots were being assholes to him. And then they took the outrageous step of removing Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, who's a big guy, big tall guy, wouldn't want to mess with him. And the GOP majority voted to remove him from his position, which is to preside over the swearing in. And then some maggot named Jake Corman took over instead and refused to swear in Senator Brewster. The funny part of it all was that Lieutenant Governor Fetterman didn't go anywhere. He He just stood to the side and remained in the Senate chamber. And the rest of the pusillanimous little pissant Republicans didn't do anything, sergeant-at-arms, none of that shit, because they really didn't want John Fetterman to come over and give them the thorough stomping that they richly deserved. But in point of fact, this is a bit of a roadmap. Or I fear it is. I hope it's not, but I fear it is. I can envision, and bear in mind, I don't have my frayed, threadbare purple robe with the appliqued moons and stars that are peeling off, and "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby," written in glow-in-the-dark paint across the front. I don't have that handy. I don't even have the magic eight ball with the cracked screen that says, "Answer Hazy, ask again later." No, I'm reading the tea leaves that are the maggots. Maybe they're more like pea leaves. Dear God, Giraffe's doing it to me now. I can envision a situation in which Ossoff and Warnock win their respective runoff elections. Loeffler and Perfidu, Offler, Waffler, Loeffler, Perdidu, and Perfidu object and file court challenges and yada, 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 horseshit, horseshit, horseshit. And then when it's clear that Ossoff and Warnock have won, then Moscow Mitch McConnell refuses to allow them to be sworn in. It's fair. No, don't worry about the emails telling me how it couldn't happen. We're past the point of things can't happen. Everything can happen, I promise you. So I can't help wondering if this was sort of a, it's like a test audience in Boston before a play opens on Broadway. Let's see how this plays in Harrisburg, and then we'll see how it plays in D.C. Yes, you're absolutely right, Dave, in South Carolina, Stan. Pennsylvania, this is Pennsylvania, I think. Oh, it's Pennsylvania, Bamistan. You know, Pittsburgh in the west, Philly in the east, and Alabama in the middle. This is cool. A note. Hey, Robin. December 31st, 2020 was my sister's 53rd birthday. In honor of that and your reintroducing yourself on that auspicious night, I propose a batten down the maggots challenge. I'll match 53 bucks that comes into the horn and I'll send it off tomorrow if it's met by the end of the program tonight. Besides, lay off the giraffe. He's improving. As opposed to Nitwit Nero, who was unimproving last night. Jesus, he delivered a stem winder that would have made Castro blush. And thoroughly incoherent into the bargain. So, thank you. That was from Dave and the Blind. The Batten Down the Maggots challenge is also on the table now, alongside the Fuck 2020 challenge and the Purge the Republicans of Georgia challenge, meaning that there is $103 in challenges. If it's met, it will leave us with only $69 to finish fundraising for the evening. So let's start on Joe and Giraffe's challenge, then you'll move to Billable Rick's, and then we will move to Dave and the Blind's Batten Down the Maggots challenge. And, well, thank you, Billable. I've been awarded a cowbell for reading the pea leaves. Sometimes these things just happens semi-spontaneously. Henceforward, with the Jacob Blake decision, Flavio up in Wisconsin says, henceforward, I will refer to my home state of Wisconsin as Wississippi. Yeah, I understand. I do. Alisconsin? Wisbama? Wisbama-sippy? And there's a lot of potential there. Ralphs, meanwhile, with a point of giraffe anatomy. I don't think giraffes have antlers. Well, they've got those two little knobs at the tops of their heads, so I guess that's what we're talking about here. And in fact, point of fact, Ralphs just jumped in, so Joey and Giraffery's purge for the Georgia Republican challenge only has $15 left on it. And then we'll move on the others. So, now, you know, pretty much it's all a matter of hurry up and wait now. Hey, Steve in Georgistan, brother, what time do the polls close there? And maybe if you feel like it, if you've been following your local coverage today, give me a holler and let me know what you've watched, what you've seen so far, turnout, weather, all of those things. And of course, tomorrow's the 6th, which means another shit show day. Roger in Oregon pointing out that apparently these fuckers are going to contest one state, then after the two-hour break, they'll object to another state and force another two-hour break. This shit can go on possibly past midnight. Is the strategy to push the confirmation past midnight and hence unable to certify the election? It might be. There's all kinds of sickening gamesmanship and brinksmanship taking place here. Oh, thank you, Roy. Roy says CNN shows 90 minutes till the polls close, so that would be polls closing at 7, and Steve in New York confirms that. Polls close at 7 in Georgia, and Steve says, also, if a giraffe wants to call his little horns antlers, that's his prerogative. You're damned right it is, Steve. It absolutely is. And so I can happily announce that the Purge Georgia of Republicans challenge has been met, and $10 of Billable Rick's Fuck 2020 challenge has been met. Thank you, David in South Carolina, Stan. And now, thanks to Christopher, there's only $5 remaining in the Fuck 2020 challenge. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you so much. Meeting some challenges. Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Christopher. That's tremendous and deeply appreciated. So we are we're making progress, but you know, there are some shockers in here along the way with what's coming tomorrow. One of the most repulsive Republicans in the Senate, you may remember him as the guy who brought a fucking snowball into the well of the Senate in January some years past to prove that there was no such thing as climate change because it was snowing in D.C. in January. Well, Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma, Stan, who has been a reliable maggot as there can be, says he is not going to play games in the Senate tomorrow in regard to the attempt to throw out Electoral College votes. He released a statement today and said, to challenge a state's certification, given how specific the Constitution is, would be a violation of my oath of office. And that's not something I'm willing to do, and is not something Oklahoma would want me to do. Well, Jim, I hate to tell you, buddy, but loyalty to the Union is probably not high on the maggot list there in Oklahoma, Stan. And you're probably not more popular than Nitwit Nero is. But here we go. But that, and again, that's a matter of reading between the lines, but he says that for him to challenge a state certification would be a violation of his oath of office. He must therefore be saying that people like Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, and Josh Hawley and Marsha Gedneth Blackburn are violating their oaths of office. So on the strength of testimony like that, could not their Senate seats be brought into question as having violated their oaths? I mean, if the oath of office doesn't mean anything, why bother taking it? I know, like the Hippocratic Oath. You swear an oath as a physician to first do no harm and a whole bunch of other stuff. And you promised to help educate the sons, you know, back then, you know, misogyny of any other doctors and all kinds of stuff in the Hippocratic Oath. And it, you know, no doctor ever gets taken down for violation of the Hippocratic Oath. But a governmental oath, a constitutional oath that is a necessity, a necessary condition precedent to holding the office, I'm not so sure about that. So in his statement, Inhofe continued, "I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution and to bear true faith and allegiance to the same. It is an oath I take very seriously, and in my 34 years in federal office, I have not and will not violate my oath," said the oaf. Yeah. And there was a whole lot of braying going on there. "On Sunday, I was sworn in for my fifth full term in the United States Senate. While being sworn, I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution and to bear true faith," and we did that part. "I will not violate my oath. When talking about my work in the Senate, I often reference the Constitution. It's the guide for my legislative priorities." Luckily, there's nothing in the oath of office about not telling lies, because that's a whopper. His legislative priority in the Senate has consisted entirely of getting his nose so far up the collective recta of the hydrocarbon industries that you can see his smiling face when they sneeze. Probably because they're choking on coal dust or fracking dust. Defending America and infrastructure. By infrastructure, he means all the frack pads he can manage, and oil wells, and coal mines. I can remember being in the Hart Senate office building. And the Hart Senate office building has this huge 4- or 5-story atrium with skylights at the top and the sculpture of a mountain in the atrium. And we've walked past it on a number of times and said, "With these fuckers, you ought to take off about the top two-thirds of that mountain, and it'd be appropriate considering what they've let go on in Appalachia." But the window to the Senate Natural Resource Committee looks out on that atrium, and as far as I know to this day, there's a sign in the window of the majority offices of the House Natural Resources Committee that reads, and God knows I've seen it enough to last a lifetime, "Co keeps the lights on!" So that's some pretty serious horse shit about defending America. But he went on and said, "Just as the Constitution is clear about what should be Congress's top priorities, it is also clear that the power to govern our presidential elections, including certification and recounts, is explicitly delegated to the states in Article 2, Section 1. Furthermore, any questions about the electoral process or validity of results may only be constitutionally adjudicated in the courts. My job on Wednesday is clear, and there are only two things I am permitted to do under the Constitution: ensure the electors are properly certified and count the electoral votes, even when I disagree with the outcome." That last part was, "Donald, I'm sorry, please don't mean tweet at me." To challenge a state's certification, given how specific the Constitution is, would be a violation of my oath of office, and that's not something I'm willing to do and not something Oklahomans would want me to do. I hear the frustration and anger from so many of my constituents, and believe me when I say that no one was more disappointed in the outcome of the presidential election on November 3rd than me. I think that would be "than I." The way you know that is you put the verb that would be behind it, and so it would be November 3rd than me was. No. November 3rd than I was. Fire your PR guy there, Jim. "I wanted President Trump to win. I supported him every step of the way, highlighting regularly all he's accomplished in the past 4 years and authoring the Trump top 10 card. And when he said, 'Kneel in front of me, Jim Inhofe,' I knelt. No, I added that part. I understand so many have uncertainty and are questioning of the integrity of our elections. We have a lot of work to do to restore all Americans' confidence that our elections are held freely and fairly, with every legal vote counted, and are starting that work now. Oh, shut up. The only people who don't have faith in the electoral process in this country are the people who are seeing their orange god emperor go the hell away. And their concerns aren't concerns. There's a big damn difference between legitimate concerns versus butthurt. And these, to be clear, are not legitimate concerns. Yeah, violating his oath of office, Stephen New York says, sorry there, Jimmy, but that horse left the barn years ago. The barn burnt down and was rebuilt, and your horse's son left the barn. That's about the size of it. Kyle, meanwhile, says, if we had a functional Justice Department, I know, but why do we continue it? And maybe we will under President Biden. All these Republican fascist rat fuckers trying to perpetuate a coup and overthrow the duly elected government of the United States would be charged with and found guilty of violating their oath to defend the Constitution, otherwise known as fucking sedition and treason. Oh, boy, continues Kyle. The maggots are going to be pissed at all this democracy breaking out. And something up with which they will not put. Damn Skippy. So, I guess he tried not to get mean tweeted, but I think he's going to get mean tweeted. And Jesus, the meanness lasted. You know, that's all there is to Donald Trump, is just meanness, pettiness, vindictiveness, fear, and unjustified ego. And he reminds me of something that, I think Churchill said about maybe Attlee, the leader of the opposition.
He's a humble little man with a lot to be humble about.
That pretty much sums up Donald Trump. It very much does. Let's see here. Meanwhile, another story out there. There was a... a maggot rally at Freedom Plaza in D.C. I've been there. Our buddy John in Central PA said, I used to think you were being somewhat hyperbolic when you referred to them as bioterrorists, but this is absolutely exactly that. It is never my intent to be hyperbolic on this program. I was no good at algebra. So being hyperbolic or even parabolic is, well, it involves the quadratic equation and me and it just don't get along. But all kidding aside, no, bioterrorists is what they are. They are trying to achieve political ends and using the spread of terror and disease to achieve their goal. And so, at this pro-Trump rally in D.C., earlier today, you had this.
Turn to the person next to you and give them a hug. Someone you don't know. Go hug somebody. Go ahead and spread it out. Mass spreader. It's a mass spreader event. It's a mass spreader event. It's a mass spreader event. There you go. Hug it out. I'm married, but if you want to give me a hug too, or you can do that. Turn to the person next to you and give a hug. Someone you don't know. Go hug somebody.
Yeah. You heard it. Mass spreader event. And apparently there's no small amount of people there. And they, of course, are not wearing their masks. And they've brought their urine-colored snake flags with them. And their Trump 2020 flags. Trump lost. LOL. I thought about getting one of those. But as much fun as it would be, I have no particular desire to see our house burnt to the ground. Sorry, I'm kind of a chicken that way. So, no, I'm not kidding. Bioterrorists is bioterrorists. John in Central PA pointed out the whole business with the Pennsylvania Senate. Trial run? Damned right. It's exactly what it was. So, a hot mess last night, leading to a hot mess tomorrow. And, you know, kind of, well, here we are. And God knows if they, I can scarcely stand the idea of even giving voice to this. If Loeffler and Perfidu go back to the Senate, those maggots that are gathered in D.C. will feel like they've really got the bit in their teeth. And God alone knows what will follow from it. I, honest to God, wish I was being hyperbolic. I promise you I'm not. Oh, and from the world of broadcast media comes a little bit of news, and I find it to be sad. 87-year-old Larry King, who is a type 2 diabetic, who has had almost as many heart attacks as Richard B. Big Time Dick Cheney before he dicks you, who's had lung cancer, has angina. Well, he's been hospitalized, according to CNN, with COVID-19 at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. Hopefully, he will not find himself in the position of having a doctor who refuses to order the monoclonal antibody cocktail and is himself informed enough to say, "Get me that stuff right now." But in a way, he was a big inspiration to me, because the station that I worked at in Tuscumbia, one of them, well, we ran Larry King, and so I would listen to him a lot long before he went to CNN, listen to him at night on the Mutual Broadcasting Network. Beep-doop. And, you know, people say, oh, Rush Limbaugh changed everything forever. No. It was Larry King who redefined radio talk. Steve in New York letting me know that he was in the ICU and was out of the ICU either as of today or yesterday. He did a live program once when I was living in Atlanta and working at CNN. I got off work and boogied out to the hotel by the perimeter where he was doing his gig. And it was just promotional. He was doing his show live, but in front of a live audience, you know, bodies you can see. And that's one of the things that you don't get much of in radio, or didn't. Hey, stand by for a sec, okay? Sorry, had to take a family call. No, but what I was saying is I got a chance to watch Larry King in action, you know, Larry King Live. And on a few occasions, I actually was the voice who did it. Welcome to Larry King Live. Tonight, Larry's guests. But it was a real inspiration for me. And I learned a lot about how to go about trying to do this. So, you know, I never was entirely sure of what his politics were, and that was kind of the sign of he was doing his job right. But there was a lot more to emulate and a lot more to respect in Larry King than there ever will be in Rush Limbaugh. I mean, the bottom line on Rush Limbaugh, who has the slowest moving stage 4 lung cancer in the history of lung cancer, the bottom line on Rush Limbaugh is that if you gave him an enema, you could then bury him in a matchbox. I know. There went dinner in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. Sorry. You're just going to have that from time to time. That's right, says Earther. Lick each other's faces. Go on, play that spitball dodgeball. Yeah, Kincaid, you know who also wore masks? Darth Vader. And Lee in New York. Humble. I hate to disagree. Trump has many reasons to be humble, but he has never been humble, in spite of the Churchill quote. True enough, but I think we're splitting hairs. As for the weather report from Georgia Stan, Brother Bishop Steve says the weather is mild. The consensus about the turnout is so far all has gone smoothly across Georgia, with wait times averaging about a minute. Interesting. So we don't have any real, the article Steve sends me is from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which should be a fairly definitive voice on the issue. Georgia runoff, few problems, short lines. To open till 7 p.m., absentee ballots can be returned to drop boxes across the state by until 7 p.m. Two polling places will be staying open late to accommodate votes who may have been held up by problems earlier today. But the election has gone smoothly, according to the AJC. Gabriel Sterling, the state's voting system manager, said, "It's been sort of calm. We haven't seen anything too over-the-top crazy, which is good. But we want steady. We want to see that the people who want to cast their vote, that their votes are going to count." But they had problems with election equipment in Columbia County near Augusta. So those places will stay open until 7:01 p.m. and 7:04 p.m. Some people had to fill out emergency ballots when polls opened in Columbia County, because programming issues on the ballot scanners and poll manager access cards had failed. They'll be open late in Tift County, Georgia, in South Georgia, until 7:40 p.m., but they're not quite sure why. Two ballot scanners are jammed. One wasn't scanning properly. Six video game voting machines had to be replaced. And in Butts County, Georgia, an outfit called American Woodmark Corporation was pressured via social media and civil rights activists to let their workers leave early and stop production at 4:30 p.m. about an hour and a half ago so that its workers could go and vote. Because originally, American Woodmark had said that its shift would have to stay at work until after polls closed. So declaring that it wasn't what it seemed at all, American Woodmark said,
We apologize for the misunderstanding of today's plant closing time. American Woodmark supports the right to vote of all of our employees. So it was a misunderstanding. Nobody understood that they wanted them to work until, right. So, well, I'll just kind of refresh that from time to time to see what's going on. And this being Trump-tanic Tuesday, well, there's no small amount of stupid to go around. Enter L. Lynn Wood. Last week, he cooked up a new conspiracy theory. Mm-hmm. This time he went after Chief Justice John Roberts, old balls and strikes. And Wood said, "You were recorded discussing Justice Scalia's successor before the date of his sudden death. How did you know Scalia was going to die? Are you a member of any club or cabal requiring minor children as an initiation fee?" That's the QAnon stupidity. He also recently claimed that he is the second coming of Christ. Might be time for a little mental health wellness check on old L. Lynn Wood there, don't you think? Because he really did that. Among other things, a lawsuit was filed against L. Lynn Wood by former partners Nicole Wade, Jonathan Grunberg, and Taylor Wilson. They accused him of fraud and breach of contract for agreeing to an undisclosed settlement when they left the firm over his, quote, erratic, hostile, abusive, and threatening behavior. And the former partner said they have a tape of L. Lynn Wood saying, and that's Lucian Lynn Wood, "I might actually be Christ coming back for a second time in the form of an imperfect man, elevating Christ consciousness. That caused you to have a little bit of a chill? Who'd be more eloquent to say what the will of God is, the belief of God in me? I represent Moses. I represent Ananias, the believer. I'm like the power of King David. Now look, you all, I told you I was going to pray tonight to my God, not to myself, because to me there's God and there's me." Yeah. And once again, we're reminded that in this country, if you hear voices, generally speaking, that will be taken as a sign of mental health intervention being necessary. But not as long as you say it's Jesus. You remember early in the Trump administration, the kerfuffle that ensued when Mike Pencil Neck Geek got all butthurt because people criticized him for saying that God talks to him? "You're criticizing my faith." No, we're taking note of the fact that you're apparently, well, schizophrenic, psychotic. I don't know what the terminology is these days under the Diagnosticals and Statistic Manual, 5th edition. But you're hearing voices, Mike, and I don't care if you think it's Jesus, that's generally not a good sign. Yeah, I think Flavio says, "Didn't Larry King go to work for Sputnik Radio?" I think he did. He'll just about work for anybody. Because he's got to keep his hand in the game. Meanwhile, Dave and the Blind, "I miss one program and all the shit hits the fan. Well, my beloved community, it never ceases to amaze me, the stupidity of Republicans." Republicans eat their young. That's right. Donald Trump can't help but ask him to beg for $12,000 votes. It won't do 12,000 votes. It won't do him any good. He's still an orange piece of shit, your buddy Dave and the Blind. P.S. I'm going to have to listen to the whole program Thursday just to catch up. Thanks a lot, guys. Well, we all have our bears to cross, don't we, Dave?
Yeah, and so here we are at the top of the second hour. We are $5 away from completing the Fuck 2020 and Kick It to the Curb challenge, and then we'll be off to Dave and the Blinds, challenge. So that's exciting. Let's finish that off. Let's finish off the first challenge if we can, and get started on the or finish off the second challenge if we can, then get started on the third. That's interesting. Axios reporting, and thank you, Darlene, in Connecticut. Axios reporter Jonathan Swan revealed on MSNBC that President Donald Trump didn't know that Vice President Mike Pence, whole neck geek, had any role in the Electoral College. It was only from the Lincoln Project's video that they ran on Fox News, only in the D.C. market, that Trump learned that Pence had some role in the counting of the ballots. The ad was sort of over-the-top, ominous framing, points out to their audience of one that Pence actually plays this role and will be sort of putting the ceremonial sound of death to President Trump's presidency, said Swan. Trump sees this ad, becomes enraged, and begins to take this up with Mike Pence privately in a number of conversations. I almost said coronavirusations. He asked Mike Pence to send cease and desist letters to the Lincoln Project, which he doesn't do, and starts asking Pence to object when he has to certify the results. Ironically, Trump turned to do exactly what the Lincoln Project thought he would do, and now there's a rift between not only Trump and Pence, but between Trump's supporters and Pence. So, the crazy continues apace, and, yeah, I like that, because it may very well be that Nitwit Nero foreclosed one of his best avenues to avoiding federal prison time, namely resigning and letting Mike Pence become president and then pardoning him. I'll bet you he doesn't trust him to do it now. And yes, I freely acknowledge that that is a delightful possibility. Stoke the stroke, Mike! Stoke the stroke. Oh, and L. Lynn Wood also recently claimed that Jeffrey Epstein is alive. I'm fully aware of the onslaught of attacks being made against me based on my revelations about Chief Justice John Roberts. Before attacking me, maybe fair-minded people would first ask Roberts to tell the truth, or ask Jeffrey Epstein. He's alive. Oh, my aching back. That's just... well, no bottom with these people. So, I mentioned Kenosha. Shannon Watts, with a tweet, and thank you, David, in South Carolina, Stan, for sharing it. Jacob Blake on the difference between his son and Kyle Rittenhouse. It's two justice systems. That 17-year-old killed two people and blew another man's arm off. They gave him water and a high five. My son got ICU and paralyzed from the waist down. That really does make it rather shockingly clear, doesn't it? And of course, we can't keep up with the news cycle quickly enough, and I'm still wondering about the fallout from the Secretary of Defense letter. I'm wondering if they maybe hipped some conspirators to the fact that they were onto him. I don't know. But just the same, let's run over to the stress line and check in and see who we've got on the line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin. It's Darlene from Connecticut.
Hey, Darlene.
So, the Trump-Pence thing, you know, you got me thinking because I'm wondering if Trump would do both things. I can't really, like, for example, pardon himself, but then also, well, I feel like I just don't see where he would necessarily want to put himself at, because of his, you know, outsized ego, would want to put himself at Pence's mercy, in a sense. I think that would be really tough for him to do. He would, for the first time, be beholden to Mike Pence.
Well, yeah, and you know, Nixon had to be convinced, Darlene.
That's what I'm thinking, that they're going to have to do an awful lot of arm twisting, which like Ivanka might have to be, you know, they would have to probably really convince him to.
Dadams, I don't want you to go to prison. How can I do your hair for you in the stir?
But I mean, I'm struggling to see him actually putting himself in a position where, like, he owes Pence. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I feel like his ego would preclude that. His outsized ego, and you know, and you heard what he said. You know, in that article, that Raw Story article, or that I sent you. You know, where he said, "Well, you know, I might not like him so much."
You do that. So much. You do that way too well.
Oh shit! Sorry. and of course, obviously, this is a nail biter. You know, it's interesting because I guess you said that the polls close there at in Georgia at 7 p.m.
Yeah, 52 minutes.
Which is interesting. The poll and you know. That's an East Coast state. So I'm surprised, you know, in Connecticut, the polls close at 8 o'clock for us. Now, I don't know if it's somehow different for a runoff election, but I feel like that's interesting. I don't know when they open. I assume they open at 6, or I'd be very curious to see what the span of time
is. No, it's 12 hours, 12 hours, 7 to 7.
Okay, we have 6 to 8.
Well, that's because Connecticut likes for its citizens to vote.
Oh, well, yeah, I think so. And this is, I find that very problematic. I find the fact that it's only 12 hours very problematic. And again, you know, well, not again, but I'm feeling like there should be some parity or some sort of, there should be similarities in terms of how the states do this stuff. But then I guess you're talking federalizing it, and I don't know.
Yeah, the word I think we're both reaching for is uniformity, Darlene.
Right, uniformity, union, uniformity, exactly. The other thing I wanted to ask you, been dying to ask you about, is Nancy Pelosi. And I know on this program over the years you've talked about how, well, the idea being that the more people that vote, the more likely it is that Democrats win and that Democrats, you know, that more Democrats come out. The more people that vote, the more likely it is that Republicans won't dominate in terms of our political system,
right,
which is why Republicans do everything they possibly can to stop the vote and prevent people from voting, especially African-American citizens and so on. Nancy Pelosi, who she's been around a long time. I mean, you know, she basically popped out in the House of Representatives as a baby. She's been there forever. She'll be turning 80, and I guess this is her last soiree, you know, or last time as Speaker of the House.
No, she said openly that she would step down.
She would step down
after this term.
And she's been around a long time, and you know, I think overall she's a pretty good strategist. We don't agree with her all the time on things, obviously.
Yeah,
right?
we're not going to get to that. That person doesn't exist.
Exactly. On anywhere. So, but she did say, and she said this several times, I don't know if you heard this or not, but she said that people think, Republicans think, people think that the more people that get out and vote, the less likely it is that Republicans will win. She goes, that's not true. She said Republicans can win as well the more that people get out to vote. She said that several times, and I don't know if you ever heard that and what your take was on that.
I did, and I think I understand what she's saying.
Okay, go for it.
For instance, you know, they've had vote by mail, absentee ballot voting reliably in Florida for years. And the Republicans do a good job of getting their of turning out their vote. And so consequently, it is very, very difficult to win major offices as a Democrat in Florida. You know, there are get out the vote efforts in Alabama and Mississippi, and you know, where you have Republican majorities, get out the vote generally gets you Republican victories. I mean, that's the way I understood that.
My sense was she was talking about it. Like, I thought she was talking about it from a California perspective, though. You know, but obviously, you know, she's a representative from California, but I almost thought that, like, she's seen this happen in California. So I guess I'm a little confused on that, but you're saying that she's thinking of it in terms of the Republican states.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to look at, look, I mean, I think from just an analytic standpoint, look at 2017, Darlene. Look at that special election that featured Roy Tolamore versus Doug Jones. And it was easy in the aftermath of Doug Jones' victory in 2017 to say, hey, something big could be happening here. But the fact of the matter is, it took a monumental turnout on the part of the African-American community, a heroic degree of turnout. But even that would not have sufficed to keep Roy Tolamore out of the Senate had it not been for about 20% of Republicans who said, can't do it, and voted for Mickey Mouse or something. And I think that points to sort of the problem. And I know we had and you've probably seen them over the last 4 years, starting with the West Virginia primary results in May of 2016. God, I can't tell you the number of articles I've read. Is a progressive revolution brewing in West Virginia? And my answer is no. I mean, I'm not bragging, but I don't think there's a lot of people who are more progressive than me in this state. But I'm also passionately attached to reality. And so there was a failure there to account for the fact that the reason Bernie did as well as he did in the primary in 2016 is because Donald Trump told people to go out and vote for Bernie. And so, you know, the there that they thought was there wasn't there. And so consequently, he gets more votes here in 2020, Trump does, than he got in 2016. And just by way of explanation as well, James in Illinois says high vote turnout equals mixed bag. The highest turnout in California was Gray Davis, the Gray Davis recall that installed superhero Governor Schwarzenegger. I always thought that Democrats would win with higher turnouts, but that cured me of the notion. And that could also be part of what Nancy was talking about. You know, we call her Nancy because, you know, she's our buddy. You know, she saw the Gray Davis recall, too.
So then it's probably more appropriate to say basically that, you know, it's the higher ideal of you know, getting out the vote, everybody who's of legal age to vote should have a right to vote, and that the chips fall where they may. Yet we see Republicans trying to stifle things. What is the disconnect here? What is the, you got Nancy saying one thing, who was it that just said that about Arnold?
That was James in Illinois.
James, which is an excellent point. This program and your program, you've always talked about how, even Trump said it, right? He's right on the surface with it. He said, I can't remember what it was pertaining to, but he said, well, a Republican will never get into office if we're allowed. Oh, the absentee ballots and mail-in ballots, right? I think he said a Republican will never get into office. So which is it, I guess?
The other thing, Darlene, that a lot of people are looking toward is what is referred to as the term is the Browning of America. And there's this assumption that as minority populations rise, they will not vote Republican and they will overwhelm the Republicans and they'll be their natural Democrats. And that's also just not true.
It's not true. Well, the Cuban expats that have come into Florida, right? They were predominantly, I think they went for Trump, right? Am I right about that or wrong? So it, that's not exactly true. And they're very religious and could easily vote conservative. So I guess it's just the prejudice on the part of Republicans that creep into this, and they're actually shooting themselves in the foot potentially.
Well, and Darlene, some of this goes back to that old adage that Robert Byrd once told me when I was a youngin. He said, "There's only two ways to run an election." Unopposed and scared to death, because anything can happen.
Yeah, and you've said that as well. With Democrats, and I think you mentioned it on your program yesterday, the fact that Republicans are trying to essentially overturn the Electoral College. I'm frustrated that we're not hearing Democrats saying,
I had yesterday was Representative Thomas Massie from Kentucky saying, y'all need to stop this shit because it's going to wind up with the Electoral College being gotten rid of, and then we will be screwed.
Exactly. Why aren't Democrats jumping all over that? And what can we do? I guess write to our Democratic senators and representatives and say, yo, this is a perfect opportunity to make the Republicans pay for this.
I don't think it hurts. Amending the Constitution.
Right?
Yeah, amending the Constitution is insanely difficult. But you know what makes it harder? Never introducing the amendment. It's like the story about the guy who falls asleep every night praying, "Dear God, let me win the lottery next night. Dear God, please let me win the lottery next night. Dear God, please let me win the lottery." And after about a week of this, a booming voice comes down out of the sky and says, "Meet me halfway. Buy a ticket."
What I would like to see is I would love to see people say, like Democrats saying that, Nancy and others say, well, look, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Obviously, the Electoral College is a problem here. The people of America voted back in November. The decision was made, and we're having them contest the electors and everything. What? We're still in a situation until tomorrow?
Yeah.
We're still in a situation where this is up in the air? Are you kidding me? well, Ben, we have a problem with this whole Electoral College thing. I think we need to throw it out. And
right, that's what I meant by the buy the ticket thing. Somebody needs to introduce that. I mean, I know there's that interstate compact notion, but I have no faith in it because it'll end up in the Supreme Court and it'll be declared unconstitutional. And so you've got to start the process.
Popular vote places,
you've got to start the process of eliminating the Electoral College, period, and determining the outcome of the presidential election based solely upon popular vote.
A popular vote, because I think we've evolved at least that far in our humanity, I'd like to think, even though it's in fits and starts. I think we could possibly say that at this point, that the Electoral College needs to fucking go. But I would love to see more and more Democrats just throwing that out there. And just if I could see just one bead of sweat on Mitch McConnell's head or John Roberts' head from that, damn.
Well, and see, that's
thrilled.
As would I. I'd just like to know that, you know, maybe Mitch McConnell's had a couple of heart palpitations. I mean,
but, yeah.
I mean, I'm on a medication that gives them to me, and they suck. They're real yucky. But the point with this is that, you know, I've seen stories about, you know, oh, man, Mitch McConnell's really worried. That sucker never lets anybody see him sweat. And I am just paranoid enough to wonder because I know the people, you know, by God, I know Kentucky politics, and say that that one report on those little oddities about his reelection were, you know, it was just one poll. And well, that's just how Kentuckians vote. It doesn't pass the smell test, Darlene.
No, it does not.
And again, those are ES&S machines. And I can't help but wondering if he knows that there's some sort of a fix in. I mean, we just got, between the November 3rd election and now, we just got the living bejesus hacked out of us by the Russians. Now, why? And we don't necessarily know everything that they got or got into.
You're saying that recent story from the Washington Post?
Yeah.
I haven't had it. It's literally here on my iPhone.
It's massive.
Story saver. Okay. Let me look at that. I didn't have a chance to look at it, but I'm like, it's literally sitting here on my screen. So Russia likely behind hacks. So I got to look through this, but is that the article you're talking about?
Yeah, well, that's the follow up. I mean, they're saying Russia's likely
so
behind
but
yeah, it was a massive.
Hack, but you're saying that it's potential that the ES&S stuff were in terms of our election.
Yeah, we don't know what favors Russia will do for a Republican.
Right. Exactly. What do you think is going to happen tonight, then? Do you think we're going to know tomorrow about what?
Well, there is a difference between, say, how Pennsylvania handled its absentee ballots and how Georgia does. I had that story a long time ago. Let me see. Stephen, New York originally hit me to it.
I'm telling you, Reverend Warnock. He's great.
Yeah, he is.
Wow.
And well, he's
beyond the Senate.
He's scared the Republicans badly because they had to darken him up, which of course is the favorite trick of these Republican rat fuckers. Because the idea is, well, you know, if he just looks a little blacker, they'll be a little more afraid of him. But this man, you know, this man is what passes for a legitimate man of God. And, of course, Nitwit Nero was having a hissy about it last night. He said you can't be in the military and be a Christian. And, of course, all the white people going, boo, boo, y'all, boo. But the fact of the matter is he was preaching the words of Jesus Christ. Those that live by the sword shall die by the sword. I mean, it kind of slipped under the radar. There was a church shooting in Texas over the weekend. And unlike your usual shootings at churches, this one was a wrinkle different. So the preacher, and I'm sorry, this is a bit of a divergence, but or a digression, please forgive me. So the preacher goes into the church for Sunday services early, and he finds this guy who's been running from the cops hiding in one of the rooms of the church. Well, he gets scared of the man of God. This is a church. It should be a matter of, well, son, you know, do you have a minute for me to talk about you, about your relationship with Jesus? He puts wings to heal. And then he comes back, and the preacher has his freedom protector. And he tries to, I guess the preacher tries to hold him at bay with his freedom protector, and the guy takes his gun from him and kills him and runs again. So the guy wasn't a murderer to begin with, but when put to it, he took, figuratively speaking, he took the sword that the preacher had lived by and helped him die by it.
Yeah. And turned it again.
Yeah. And that happens, that sadly happens more often than, you know, law-abiding gun owners out there protecting themselves against crime.
Yeah, a good guy with a gun versus a bad guy with a gun. Well, you can't get any more gooder, I guess, than a preacher with a gun, right? But it didn't save him.
No, and so my point in that long digression is to point out that, you know, when Warnock, who is just a tremendous, powerful man of faith, and I don't respect a lot of them, but I respect him because he's not out there raising money for a Learjet. He's doing Jesus's work on earth. And in fact, Matt in San Francisco pointed out a little bit ago, the only time these holy rollers will get close to the second coming is when the pool boy's named Jesus. And if that's not a cowbell, nothing is. But they can't stand it, and they have been flinging every possible racist insult, and that means that they're scared.
Yeah, because he's true blue. He's also got John Lewis, you know, and Martin Luther King. You know, it's just, you know, the Ebenezer Baptist Church, that's some backup.
And you were, you know? Yeah, it is. It is. And you were asking what's going to happen, or what's going to happen tonight? What do I guess? Well, like I said, that story that Steve hit me to months ago now, well before the November election that we went over, when mail and absentee ballots are pre-processed. Georgia is one of those states that pre-processes its absentee ballots upon receipt. Now, by comparison, West Virginia processes its absentee ballots before Election Day, and they had a tally for who won the primary and who won the general, lickety split. So it should happen. My guess is, you know, there may be protracted litigation, but there will be an initial result fairly quickly, like maybe midnight tonight.
Okay, cool. All right.
So I could be wrong. Quickly. I could be wrong.
Oh God! And then if we're lucky and you know it happens to go off in Warnock. And we got to listen to, Trump on that for another, 15 days. Yeah. So.
But I mean, the potential for stupid litigation is there. But I think, I think that something else to bear in mind, Darlene, is that we are finally seeing rumblings out of the court or courts that suggest that their tolerance for this chicanery has reached its end. You've got
which courts are we talking about? Are we talking about all of them? Are we talking about, you know, state level? Are we talking about the SCOTUS? Like, or,
well, I mean, look, I don't think you'd have Judge Boasberg doing what he did a couple of days ago that I mentioned on the air last night, saying when this litigation is complete, I will consider whether to issue a rule to show cause to the grievance committee. That was a shot right across the bow of all those maggot lawyers. The Attorney General of Michigan has done the same thing. And there may be a growing consensus that this is enough. And I don't think that Judge Boasberg, who has a lifetime appointment, you know, he's an Article III federal judge sitting in the D.C. District Court. I don't think he'd write something. I never looked it up. But I don't think that he would have written what he wrote if he had been told hands off or had any inkling from the Supreme Court that they were opposed to something like that. Let's find out a little bit about Judge Boasberg.
Well, the Supremes don't want chaos. You know, as horrendous as some of the decisions and many of the decisions that they send down, you know, we're clearly in a chaotic situation, and there's a disconnect. You know, when I was brought up in law school, you know, to do something like this was like an absolute no-no. You know, like what the Sidney Powells and the you know Rudy Giuliani's are doing. They're getting free passes after free passes after free passes. We see this with Bill Barr, and it's like as well. It's like, what does it take? What does it take? We're talking at least 29 out of 30 failed lawsuits on the Trump side.
No, it's more like it's more like 57 out of 50. They're
okay.
They're like 1 and 57.
Vexatious.
Yes.
Or as you call, or as it's been called, what's the other word?
Yeah, bad faith.
Bad faith, but there's another word they're using. I say vexatious, but it's there's another word for it.
Yeah, we talked about that.
That has been used widely. It's like, how much does it take? How much does it take? You know, and then there's one of the things I remember from law school is the cumulative factor, but it usually was something in, you know, meant in a different respect. But it's like, we're past the cumulative factor in this, in terms of the number of vexatious, frivolous, that's the word.
Yeah,
we're
frivolous,
looking for the
there
word
we go.
Frivolous lawsuits. How many does there need to be when it's clear, you know, that this is just bullshit and conspiracy crap? And thank goodness this judge is putting, I assume it's a man, I don't know, it could be his or her.
No, he's he's the same age as I am. He's 57, and he was appointed by Barack Obama, so that'll be, well, he just did that because he's an Obama supporter. He's an Obama supporter. He's an Obama judge.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. But the SCOTUS has, to a certain extent, said they've had enough too. So I don't know. What is it? 15 days. And I know your buddy John Bridivo had predicted or thought that Trump would not return to Washington. He clearly did. Came back from Mar-a-Lago. So he's there. And we're not, you know, Nancy Pelosi said it. We will fumigate him out of the White House.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to have to, in the sense that they're going to have to fumigate the entire White House, because, I would not trust Trump. I'm sorry, but I just fear, you know, they're going to have to really go over every quarter of an inch of that building.
Oh, hell yeah. And in point of fact, there's a story today, because, you know, the Young House is back to business. And today, it got nasty again. Two maggots got shitty with members of the House staff over having to wear a mask on the floor. And Nancy had to step in and say, you will follow the rules of the House. And of course, would you care to guess who they are? The two maggots?
The woman who is the gun toter that want the gun toting one that didn't want to wear a mask.
No, that's that. Well, Boebert, and she'll probably come along too. But in this case, it was Chip Roy of Puny Penis, Texas, or Dribbling Dick, or whatever it is, Syphilis Springs, or wherever it is he lives. And the other one was, of course, Marjorie Taylor QAnon Green of Georgia.
That's who I was thinking of. Sorry. That's the one I was thinking of. But there was another one that basically the Capitol Police said you will be disarmed. It was another one. And I caught a headline.
That was Boebert. She's the one that she's the one that ran the gun toting cafe in Colorado.
But I'm serious in terms of the White House. They need to really comb that thing. I am like, they're going to booby trap it with COVID bombs. I don't trust them. I don't trust anything. I agree with you. I think he was trying to infect Joe Biden at that crazy debate, you know, where he just would not shut the fuck up. And was, you know, where Biden said, you know, shut the hell up, man, or however he said it.
You shut up, man.
Yeah, we shut up, man. And basically, I really think that they're going to have to comb through that entire building and be sure.
I said a couple of weeks ago that I figure Trump will be, you know, we know it exists in human waste, the COVID. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that he was painting the ventilation ducts with his dirty diapers. Well, there went dinner in the Central Time Zone.
Exactly. I'm extremely worried about that. That they're leaving these quote unquote booby traps everywhere. You know, call me paranoid. I don't care. They really need to go. I would not be surprised if basically he waits before he actually can physically move into the place. Until Trump has vacated or been, you know, fumigated out or forced to vacate, because it sounds like he's doubling down, like he's really freaking out and is doing everything he can to try to hold on to power here. And I would love to know what kind of communications he might be having with Putin on this, on the side. Just saying. So there you go. hopefully we can take the Senate. Hopefully we'll find out at midnight tonight or a little bit after if we have a shot at that. Because I do not want to see another 2 years where, or 2 to 4 years, you know, where, Mitch McConnell is really the most powerful man in this country. And there is some hope that the relationship between Biden and McConnell is such that Biden can somehow work some deals out with him, but I'm not necessarily sanguine about that pie in the sky idea. I don't know how you think, what you feel about that, because obviously they were in the Senate together for a very long time. So maybe there's some hope there if Ossoff and Warnock do not take the two Senate seats, but I'm not so sure about that. So.
Yeah, I mean, I loved that essay. It made perfectly good sense. It made good sense the way that telling Merrick Garland to go put on his robe and go have a seat made sense. But this is actually on more sounder, firmer constitutional ground. But I still don't know if traditionalist that Biden is, that he would let, because it's a let situation, that he would let Vice President Harris do that.
Let her do what?
Exercise her power as president of the Senate and take away Mitch McConnell's authority, even if we don't get Warnock and Ossoff. She can do that.
I think, well, then I wasn't aware of that piece. I guess I'm missing that part, but I think he should, because we're in a desperate situation in terms of our politics and everything that has happened. And I'd like to think, well, actually, there's evidence that this isn't necessarily thinking. There's evidence that he has done this and that he has learned, that Biden has learned through his many years in the political world and political firmament. But it's very, very clear, very, very clear that Obama made a huge, massive error on his way out by not calling Mitch McConnell out and saying exactly what you had said. Mr. McConnell has waived his constitutional right, the Senate's constitutional right, to advise and consent on my nominee for the Supreme Court, i.e. Merrick Garland. Here, Merrick, here's your robe. Put it on, don your robe, and head on over there. Because now look at the fucking mess we're in. We've already lost not one, but now two Supreme Court justice seats because he didn't push back. And it only emboldened McConnell even more to turn around and basically say, make up new rules. I'd like to think that Joe Biden noticed this and learned from this, because we're in, it created an even worse mess than we're already in. And basically, what's the harm in having Joe Biden push Mitch McConnell to the point where it has to go forward? Like it, he calls him out and says, well, you're not following the Constitution, so I'm going to do what I want, and force Mitch McConnell into taking it into the courts and having to get up in front of justices or judges and say, you know, well, I don't need to abide to the Constitution. I don't think that's going to go over well.
I don't think so either. And
so, you know, and I don't know, there's something about Kamala. She knows stuff, and she kind of gives signals that she knows in the way she says things. She's really good in terms of, I think she's, you know, she goes, we will be inaugurated on the 20th, and there will be a female black, just, you know, a black woman appointed to the Supreme Court. There are certain things that she says that it's like she knows a lot. She knows stuff. And it's like, you know, like she's got the insider information. And I don't know if he would stop her from exercising that. But can you enlighten me on how she can push forward? Say Ossoff and Warnock do not win, or one doesn't, the other doesn't.
And
Mitch McConnell is still. What is that power that she has?
Well, the bottom line is that the Senate, the position of majority leader, does not exist in the Constitution. One.
Correct.
Two. Yeah. The constitutional magistrate, if you will, of the Senate is the vice president. And there's a long history of the vice president acting as the leader of the Senate. We've talked about it in the past, for instance, although he is America's Satan, or has been made it, Aaron Burr was roundly applauded for the means by which he presided over and managed an impeachment trial of a sitting Supreme Court justice in like 1804. That may have been Chase. I'm not sure. But the vice president, as president of the Senate, has the right to run the Senate. And as far as I can tell, and based on the article I read, and I sort of back-checked it, and I think the author was right, the tradition of the Senate majority leader, as opposed to the Speaker of the House, the Senate majority leader, it only comes into the form that we understand it today during, ironically enough, FDR's administration, because there was a depression on the vice president was actually rather busy dealing with elements of the depression and then the Second World War. And so the president via the vice president delegated authority to the head of the majority, the head senator of the majority in the Senate, and said, you know, you're going to be in charge of the parliamentary procedure and what gets heard and what doesn't get heard. And that's where we get the tradition of or the idea of the majority leader. It's not carved in stone.
And who's we? The Republicans?
No, I mean, that's we, the people. I mean, that's where we get the idea of a majority leader. And it's one of those transgenerational knowledge things that just sort of gets forgotten along the way. You know, there's always been a lottery. Lottery in June, corn heavy soon. It's always, the majority leaders always run the Senate. Well, that's bullshit. And so she really could stand there with the gavel in her hand and say, I am reclaiming my time, so to speak, and I, the vice president, the president of the Senate, will determine the agenda of this Senate. And she has the power then to recognize any member of the Senate to bring a piece of legislation to the floor.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Wow. All right. So can you, do you remember where you saw that article? Like what publication it was? That sounds fantastic. I want to read that.
Okay. Yeah. Give me a sec. Let me look here.
That's okay. I mean, it doesn't, you don't have to do it now, but I'm just, that is fascinating because I think she would love to have that capability.
Okay. Let me just scroll here while we talk, sing a couple of bars of Happy Days Are Here Again or something till I find this thing. Well, let's see.
Happy Days Are Here Again. Because I could see her wanting that. Biden, at least at this point, is saying, you know, in his little speech, I think that Todd had mentioned, gearing up Georgians to get out there and vote, saying like, getting these two Senate seats is really the future of the country, is our ability to get things done. That could be, he doesn't want to have to do that, what you're suggesting. But I almost think like we're in such a serious situation here that.
Okay. So I've got it for you.
Okay, good. I was just kind of spewing. Go ahead.
in the business, Darlene, it's called vamping.
Vamping. I'm vamp. Okay, cool.
Okay.
All right.
It is. I think it'll pop. Let me see here if it does when I type it in. The title. See if it takes me to where I want to be. And, yep, there it is. If you type in "Who's Afraid of Mitch McConnell," it'll show you a link from Prevail by Greg Oliar, and it's Greg Oliar, OLEAR, GregOliar.substack.com. And the piece is actually written. Let me get it here. The piece is actually a guest column by Lisa Marie Kerr, or Kerr, K-E-R-R. And what's really cool is that she's a lawyer and a social worker from here, West Virginia.
Oh, cool.
It's really neat because the last line of her essay is, "End this nightmare of it, Madam Vice President. Please."
Wow, that sounds like a fantastic article. And
yeah, it's not that long a read, but it makes perfect sense. She is speaking; she's speaking truth. And again, it's one of those things where it would require affirmative action. It would require an affirmative decision. But it could happen. Now, So it's, yeah. Lee in New York pointing out McConnell and Biden, while they serve together, I doubt they're friends. The new Senator McConnell saw Robert Bork get denied a SCOTUS seat. In my opinion, that was the reason McConnell has grabbed every judicial seat he can get. Do not expect McConnell to give a nanometer.
Could be true.
Yeah.
Very true.
And so it will have to be taken from him.
Exactly.
And the sad thing is, it would be nice if they were so proactive that they were ready to go in there and do it from jump. But if something like that were to happen, I suspect it would have to be after being stymied and after having shown to them that Mitch McConnell was still the awful little petty tyrant put in the throne over America by 1.4 million maggots in the Commonwealth of Kentucky stand.
And also the third leg of a third prong being that there is huge tremendous pushback by the people that voted Biden and Harris in, that people just flip out and start saying, you need to do this because we're in such a serious situation. Because in other words, the public outcry, i.e. our work is not done. Biden responds to that on occasion.
And it also seems like, yesterday in Georgia, when he said, if you don't put Warnock and Ossoff in, those $2,000 checks are never going to go.
Yeah, and I was listening to it today.
And that's just
because
a fact.
Todd was raving about that speech, and I've got to listen to it. Yeah, yes. And that is a fact, absolutely. And it's also, it also creates a problem for Democrats because they keep saying, what the pittance that we're seeing now with the latest stimulus.
I saw, and maybe,
which,
you know,
I still haven't seen.
Yeah, a lot of people haven't.
That's just a down payment. I don't think I'm going to see it because I think I made too much in 2019. You shitting me?
Yeah.
2019.
Right. Yeah.
Hello?
Otherwise known as back then.
Before we even knew.
It's so ironic, though, because I saw a photograph that said Walmart knows you're getting a $600 check. And it was a picture of one of the aisles at Walmart with a bunch of 65-inch TVs stacked up. And they were all marked $548. And basically, your $600 check will get you out of the door with a new TV and taxes paid.
They said that?
Well,
that's
actually
on a sign?
No. TV, $548, and all you got to do is say, well, they knew people are getting $600.
Oh, that's typical Walmart, isn't it? I mean, using
sure.
the system
yeah.
to supplement the piss poor pay that they
yeah,
give
suck
people.
Yeah, suck up all the welfare
right?
money they can get.
Yeah, one of your kids knew that, right? I don't know if it's Ferg or somebody else who was working for, one of your daughters, I think, was working for
yeah.
Walmart. So you knew that, this is par for the course with them. They're so gross. They're gross. Walmart's so gross. If I could switch gears about Thursday.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to thank Nikki and Terry for the terrific program that they have, Trans Talk Raw. I was completely flabbergasted.
Sorry.
with your program on Thursday. You leveled me, and I was, and before people start writing in and getting all pissed off and everything else, please understand, I know these are my own problem, okay? I was shocked. I was blown away. I thought I had misunderstood. I actually texted one listener and said, I think I misheard. Did you hear this?
There was a good bit of that. There was a good bit of that, Darlene. Don't feel alone.
Oh, okay. I was pissed off at you. I was so upset with you. And again, please understand, I've learned so much since that point in time. Please don't get upset with me. I'm not.
I'm so not.
Okay. Oh my God. And I think I'm enlightened. I think, I get it. I get it. I'm totally cool. I get this stuff. I totally get it. But if someone had said to me, there's somebody you know who is going to be transitioning from a man to a woman.
I'm the last person that came to your mind, that would have come to your mind. Is that what you're saying?
You got it, dear. You would never have even occurred to me. I would have picked one of my family members. I would never have ever in 100 billion years thought of you. I was so freaked out. I was like, and I was pissed off. I was pissed off at you. I was so angry because I'm like, how could she drop this bomb on us? And then, like, essentially disappear for 4 days. And I'm like, my weekend was total. My head was I was so fucked
I'm
up.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. No, stop. This is my own issue because I actually.
Darlene, let me just say, I agonized over this. I'm not kidding when I say that. I'm not kidding when I say that I was sitting back here and Agnes was holding my hand and patting my head. Okay.
And it was a whirlwind.
And then Saturday was the video. And today, let's see, Saturday was the video. Sunday, I changed my gender markers and my picture on Twitter. And today, I ripped the big Band-Aid off and changed my photo and my name and my gender markers on Facebook.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. All right.
And
I haven't seen that yet. Yeah. Okay.
I can understand being pissed. I mean, do not feel the need to apologize. I can understand that. I just couldn't figure out a better way to do it. So Terry, since she's a geologist, and since we had had the fun story the previous day about the surf monkeys, I thought we'd talk a little bit about tectonic shifts and all of that. And then,
well, that's why I was pissed because I was like, oh, cool, this is going to be about geology. I was like, oh, this is so cool. This is going to be, I felt like I was bait and switch.
Well, I mean, okay. I think we all know that I'm an old theater freak. So, and I'm a big Mark Twain fan, and Mark Twain was fond of putting what he called the snapper at the end of the story. But Terry is still the horn geologist. Okay, I mean, that's not going to change.
Awesome.
So there's a lot to be talked about there. And I've got a new friend.
We've got a
new friend in Nikki up in far Canada.
She's terrific. I love those two, Terry and Nikki. I want to thank them for their program because it helped me so much to understand the backstory with you and I always loved the name Agnes. So if I screw up and I say Agnes and Bob, I apologize.
No, that's okay because we are.
And I want to thank Nikki and Terry because what they're doing helped me understand better when I thought that I had it all figured out. And I know this is going to sound like, I have black friends too, Okay. I know people who are transitioning. I'm really happy for them. And it's like, oh, that makes sense. Like, there's somebody who is my occupational therapist for years and very mannish. I thought very like a man, and I thought lesbian. I adored her. Very best one-liners I ever heard in terms of the physical therapy and the occupational therapy. She would say stuff like, slow muscles work harder. I still remember this shit to this day. Awesome. And one day I saw her and I said, hey, such and such. I won't say the names. And somebody and gave me a very odd look. And I'm like, is something wrong? I said, did I say something wrong? I thought, well, you know, maybe, you know, she's just preoccupied. And then I was going to the hospital there. She's part of my team. And I was going to see the physical therapist 2 weeks later. And she shows up with facial hair and a beard. And I'm like, oh, okay, got it. Okay, thought she was a lesbian. Clearly she's transitioning into a he. Totally cool. And I was never told this by my team. So I just didn't skip a beat. But there was some, there was a third person in the room who was not part of the team. And I felt very awkward. Otherwise, I would have said to her, so I see you're transitioning. What's your new name? And congratulations, that kind of thing. But I didn't feel comfortable saying that because of this other person that was in the room. And right. Then 2 weeks later, I went back and I said to my physical therapist, I'm like, so I see so-and-so is transitioning. What's his new name? And she goes, I'm really sorry. I handled that so poorly. I should have told you. And I didn't tell you. I said, well, I said, okay, please tell him congratulations. She gave me the new name. She goes, I handled it. So you handled it beautifully. You didn't skip a beat. I said, well, I can't wait to see him to congratulate him. He goes, well, unfortunately, he's leaving. He's leaving our hospital.
Oh.
Because we're all screwing up. We'll keep calling him his female name. So I think he wanted to get a fresh start. So, but I saw it coming in a way. I got it. I was like, but with you, I did not see it coming. And I just was so, I actually contacted over the weekend. I was so freaked out. I contacted my surrogate mom in Canada, who is in her late 70s, and she's very liberal. And I know you've criticized her kind of tangentially in the past, so that a purist, that kind of thing. You and I are in no position to talk because she marched in the streets. She was
No. I don't remember criticizing someone for.
All right. Well, okay. Maybe I just took it that way, but she was 100% in your camp. And I said, I know this is my issue. This is my issue. You're damn straight it is. And I said, I just didn't expect it because, and Nikki alluded to this, and this is why the program is so awesome because you had said it on the program with Nikki and Terry. You had said, that most people would never think of you because you're like a real like mannish kind of guy. You're like a guy. And she said, we tend to overcompensate.
Yeah.
We tend to overcompensate. And I'm like, oh God. Yeah. That's, and then.
Oh, I've had, Darlene, I've had the opportunity to do so much thinking and so much reflecting. I was engaged in some correspondence last night and just thinking back over the years, I have always been given, in the, you know, little community theater, school theater, college theater, whatever. I got these really masculine roles because this voice.
Yeah. You've got a beautiful voice. I mean, I love your voice. And I've got
shoulders that are 5 feet freaking wide, and those are a curse now, okay? But we're going to deal with them, because you know we make the effort to make the outside look a little bit like what the inside feels, and one of the things that dawned on me, you might get a kick out of this. I was 16, and yet we all know I can't carry a tune in a bucket.
It depends on the octave level, though, because I've heard it. You can. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I've got two. I've got like two notes I can hit. I agree. None of and there are two notes that are almost never in songs, apparently. But when I was 16, you know, I loved theater. I wanted to be around it. So we had this massive summer theater program where I was growing up. And they'd always do some big, splashy Broadway musical, usually Rodgers and Hart, Rodgers and Hammerstein, that kind of stuff. And one year, and like I said, I was about 16, and they did The King and I. And they brought in backdrops, and I worked crew and helped hang lights and all of that stuff. But I couldn't carry a tune in a bucket, but the director was eager to have somebody that could fill the room with a voice for the opening line after the overture and everything. And so I wound up being cast as the captain of the ship that delivers Mrs. Leon Owens and her son to Thailand, to Siam at the time. And my one line was, "Aye, laddie, you see that city there? That's Bangkok." And so at 16, I'm saying, "That's Bangkok," when in fact, Bangkok, Thailand is the beating heart of the most innovative gender confirmation surgeries on Earth. So I'm 16, wow. "That's Bangkok." And there's, you know, there are so many. And I even came to the realization that part and parcel, although the motive was entirely something different and entirely legit, in a way, I think I wound up playing Henry II about this time last year.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was kind of a swan song to my assigned gender at birth.
Kind of a way of maybe giving it its proper
burial.
Quote unquote burial, maybe. Yeah.
I mean, I'm real iffy about the idea of talking about the person one was as being dead. I don't like it, but I'm coming more and more to understand it. On the other hand, and I will reiterate, I am not going to get red-assed with anybody about calling me Bob, dude, man, guy, fella, because I am 57 years old, and this is going to be incredibly difficult, and I keep being told by mentors like Nikki and Terry, you just got to wait. You gotta let the medication do its magic. Don't feel like you're never gonna get there. And the most important.
How old are you now? 57.
I'll be 58. I'll be 58 this month.
58. You've already waited 58 years.
Yeah, and it was 58 years of having testosterone absolutely kick my body all over the planet. So.
Well, I
want you to know, Stephen New York is a smartass. He said, "Can I call you Toots?" You're damned right you can.
I was so pissed at him because I texted him. I you know, I love Steve. And I texted him. I said, "Are you hearing this? Did I hear this right?" And he's like, "Yep." I'm like, "Are you shitting me? You're saying yep." And, you know, Steve gets all, I just didn't see it coming.
Well, Steve's been through a coming out process in his own right.
Yes, exactly. And I think that the whole death thing of Bob, I think that's what,
but it's not, because I mean, I'm still here.
Thank you. You're still here. And I could see that. And I think I was just, my surrogate mom in Canada was like, I said I never would have seen this coming. He seems such like a guy, like a man, you know, and I had no clue about it. She goes, "It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter." And she's a retired psychotherapist. So I said, "I need a
little couch time, Mom."
Exactly. And she's seen all types walk through her door. And she said, "Gender is fluid." And she's like, "You know, Darlene, this is your stuff." And I said, I know. And it's like, I think that what I appreciated about you is that, you know, I would call in and you were always respectful. You've always been respectful to me with my, you know, as a woman calling in. You have always, And even if we talk over each other, we're apologetic. And I don't get that a lot in my life. And, you know, and I've complained privately to you in at least one email about certain my impressions of how I'm talked to by certain, you know, yes. individuals on the front porch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you never gainsay that. You never push back. But you didn't really do anything about it. And
I tried to in the background for what it's worth.
Okay, thank you. For what it's okay, thank you. I appreciate that. But I kind of understand a little bit better why now, in a sense. But I always felt like you gave me hope as a single, still single, 55-year-old cisgender female. You know, I always looked to you and said, thought to myself, Bob's such a good guy.
There are decent ones out there. Yes,
there are decent men out there.
I took that out behind the barn and beat it with an axe handle. Yes, I.
Thank right? you. And I said that to my mom, my surrogate mom, and I said, I feel like the joke's on me. She goes, "What do you mean the joke's on you?" She goes, "There are men like that out there. Knock
yes,
it
there
off."
Are.
Like she was. She was so awesome about that. And the only criticism she had for you was, and I said, I don't like how he did it. He goes ahead and he says this on Thursday and then basically is gone. My 4-day weekend is fucked up. I'm like, my head is totally fucked up. And she's like, you know how difficult this was for her to do this? He needed Terry to help him with this. And you did allude to that in the interview with Terry, who I think looks just like Jennifer Aniston, but like better looking than Jennifer Aniston. I'm just blown away at how beautiful Terry is.
She's gorgeous, and both of them
are brilliant and beautiful. And you were wearing a very sweet red number there. I don't know if it's a full dress or a blouse. It's very cute, and you had pearls. You just look so cute. And the real hero here is Agnes.
Yes.
And
that I was going to say that earlier. You took the words right out of my mouth.
She's the hero here. And just to hear the truth, I can't thank Nikki and Terry enough because they helped me understand better, especially in the honesty with which both you and Annette talked about your struggles with this, because I was like, worried. I'm thinking, you know how sometimes when you learn something, you think the whole world is learning it? But obviously,
no, yeah, you buy a yellow automobile, suddenly every third automobile you see on the road is yellow.
Well, yeah.
It's a psychological factor.
Yeah, and you've been going through this for decades. You've been, you know, working through this for decades. And, you know, I just am just blown away by your honesty. I appreciate the trans talk raw. I think it really did help me out a lot too, because as somebody who thought she had it figured out and was totally down with all, you know, and got it all, you know, I learned a lot listening to that, because it not only benefits people who are thinking about transitioning, people who are freaked out about it, people like yourself that are in the process, but it helps people like me who wants to understand better, like want to understand better what's happening. And I needed to hear the backstory. I needed to hear the backstory because, and it really helped to hear the backstory.
Well, let me tell you, if I may, a couple of things. And by the way, I've got Steve on the other line.
So we will
wrap Steve into this conversation.
Okay, cool.
But let me just point that, I mean, this blew me away because one, beautiful trans woman like Terry, and given our odd little odyssey, from the deep, dark mists of time and everything, I don't want to call her my mentor, because you know, it's kind of got men in the front of it. But she is, we are literally 25 days apart in age. And she's just slightly older than I, but she is serving in every sense as a big sister to me. And
I'm glad.
It is freaking beautiful. And I, you know, we've just been talking back and forth because Saturday was absolutely draining. You know, I'm not comfortable with,
well,
you know, I'm not comfortable with video in my previous incarnation.
Yes, I'm, yes. Yeah, yeah.
But
you were working it, girl. You were working it.
Well, thank
I don't
you.
Wear makeup. and let me tell you, I think it was good because what really
let me just add one other thing, if I may, please. I am committed to buying a new chair for this studio now.
Cool.
Because and you know, this is not laughing at, this is laughing with, because she's the one who started laughing first. Oh, God. She's going to kill me.
I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
So I'm sitting here. She's sitting there. All cameras on mobile devices and laptops and everything are by definition wide angle. You can't reduce the aspect that I know of. So you get – and so every now and then – every now and then, I can't help it, I talk with my hands. And every now and then, I would reach my hands out, and my God, it looked like it looked like albino King Kong reaching out for Faye Ray.
You know what? I didn't notice that. I noticed the nice bracelet you were wearing, but go ahead.
My Ferg's significant other made that for Agnes and me for Christmas, and I teared up. Because it was the first piece of, honest to God, jewelry that, you know.
Well, you're wearing a nice set of pearls there, though.
Fake as
yeah,
fuck.
Yeah, pretty pearls.
Yeah, they're pretty, but they're fake. And she started this one, so it's on her. She looked at me and said, "Oh my God, we look like Gandalf and Frodo."
Who said that?
Agnes. Because
she's very tiny, though.
9 foot
yeah.
person sitting next to this three. And so that's why I am committed to buying a new second chair for the studio. If that ever happens again, it will not be Gandalf and Frodo, I promise.
I didn't get that impression. I actually looked at it and thought, wow, Agnes is very petite.
And she's 5'6".
I know you're 6'2".
Yeah, I'm 6'2", and she's 5'6".
That's the same height as me.
And the thing is, most of that effect had nothing, all of that effect had nothing to do with Terry and Nikki, and it had everything to do with the wide-angle lens on the iPad that I was using. Because I have to use the iPad because I've got this one little gizmo that lets me take audio out of the iPad and into the mix desk so that we've got good audio. I'm a radio person, so I'm thinking about good audio at the same time that I'm looking like, you know, Gandalf without the beard.
I think it was good that you did it. I mean, when I saw the pain in your eyes, you were talking about something your dad had said to you. You said subtle cruelty or something like that. And I could see how much that hurt you as a child. And the stories about how you would go into your mom's drawers and look for, you know, her, you know.
Yep. Not proud of it, but it's just part of the reality.
But it's part of the reality. And it was like, wow, you know, it just hit my heart in such a way. I'm happy for you. I can hear it in your voice. I can hear it, you know, that you are relieved with this. I don't know how the hell the two of you did it for the 10 years that I've been listening to you. The only thing I ask is please don't do any more surprises for at least another 10 years. like, please don't say you're an alien or something. Okay, I'm not ready for that.
There's a Darlene, there's a reason I know about Norblap 9.
Oh shit!
Bob, are you like a lizard person?
But thanks, Steve, for being there. You know, hi, Steve, because Steve was the first person I said, am I hearing this right? And Steve was, like, so cool about it. I'm like, I'm freaking out. And Steve is like, you know, talk to Robin. She's really good with this stuff. I said, I'm not ready for it. And
well,
it was just,
and I got to tell you, I was a little
on the front porch.
I was a little worried because I heard from a lot of people that Thursday night, and the one person I did not hear from was you. And if I don't,
yeah,
if I don't hear from our community, that I'm members of our community that I'm used to hearing from, I bug a little bit. And I want to share something with you that Jeremy in Vermont said. You talking about not coming out Darlene, Jeremy said, many of us stay silent and suffer alone due to society's norms. We are rare, but there are many more than you'll ever know. And, you know, that number of 1% keeps getting bandied about. I have a sneaking suspicion the number is higher. I have no data to back it up, but I suspect it is. Because the number of people who do suffer in silence, AMAB and AFAB, is
And again,
is
I really have to say that my discordance, and I think it's a good thing because I knew, like, I was feeling this discord within myself because that higher self, that part of us that's like people call the soul or that little voice or whatever, was totally at ease with it. I was in conflict with it. So I know that I think I was just mourning who I thought you were, and in a sense, who you portrayed yourself to be, to protect yourself and your family. And my surrogate mom from Canada was like, she had one criticism of you, but she also was like, she was 100% in support of you. She said, you know, I'm worried about him and Agnes, and you know, I hope they're planning on moving. And I said, well, so I was very relieved to hear in the interview with Nikki and Terry that you had said that the reception has been really good, that you're in sort of a John Bridgeau blue dot sort of area within your area there in West Virginia. The criticism she had is, I think he should have talked to you first ahead of time. And I said, well, that's not how the show works. And I know you did speak with certain individuals that you've had long, long, long standing relationships with, like Mike Beloy, I think you said, and probably others. I said, well, the show really doesn't work that way. But I'm really glad, as in much angst as I was in, I'm really glad it worked out this way because I eagerly listen to Trans Talk Raw, and it's a fantastic program, and I learned so much, and what Terry and Nikki are doing is a tremendous service because it's educating know-it-alls like me.
It's meeting. It is at the ground level, Darlene, it's meeting a need. And let me just tell you one thing about that episode. This just blew my mind because Terry told me about this last night. She told me that is now the single most watched episode of Trans Talk Raw in its history. It's one
not
year
surprised
history.
Surprised because I was looking at the comments. I was listening again to it today leading up to, I want to hear it again, especially Agnes's part of it. There's 104 comments. And 99.9% are all really awesome. They're really good. One individual commented on how articulate you are. And I'm like, they have no clue. They have no clue how, you know, because they're not listening to the horn. And hopefully there'll be some crossover in terms of that. There was a lot of positive feedback, and I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to it again. I think you were sort of hesitant, but I think you should.
No, we've watched it a couple of times, just because I want us to both get used to the idea of being seen. And it's hard.
Exactly.
It's hard for both of us, but there are Terry told me that as of this morning, there are over 3,200 views. Which is
huge. I'm looking at 3.6 thousand now. I'm seeing 3.6K. views. I'm actually looking at the still image of it. And they're fantastic. Terry and Nikki. Nikki's great. I mean, she just, you know, she just leads the whole thing. And it is very good. And you learn a lot. And I can't thank them enough because they really helped me understand this better, understand where you're coming from better. My surrogate mom from Canada was everything she said mirrors exactly everything that you were saying. She called it beautifully. And because of her background, you know, she's had people, I said, well, you know, it's just unbelievable. I needed to hear it from you. And that Agnes, I needed to hear it from the two of you. And so it was, I don't know how you kept it up for as long as you did.
Being afraid that one will lose everything and or die is a strong
exactly.
motivator. And I've asked myself the question 100 times, if not 1,000. And Terry's the one who gave me the answer. She said, you know, we transition not when we choose to or when we want to, but when we absolutely have to, when there's no other alternative.
Yeah, and that's what my surrogate mom was saying. She's like, you know, the health issues that you were encountering. She said, it's no surprise she is feeling better. It's not surprising. So, but I think Nikki is right. You gotta be patient because I know you're probably anxious now, but it's going to take time.
Yeah. Estrogen hasn't fixed my rotten neck yet, but I yet hold out hope. It's amazing. The change. Yeah. Jump right in, Steve, please.
Okay.
Sorry, Steve.
I've just been listening because I also want to disavow an assertion that Darlene made. And Bob, you and I have had a couple discussions about this. So if I start to, if you want me to keep this, if I get to the point where I start revealing things that you and I talked about, and you don't want me to say, hey, Steve, you know, please keep that between you and me.
Well, you didn't call me toots, so I'm kind of pissed.
Okay, babe. cheeks.
Cheeks.
You know what? I got to tell you a funny story. I actually had a client who was transitioning, and he, it was so funny. And she kept saying to me, "Call me bitch. Call me hot stuff. Call me sweet cheeks. Call me toots. Call me," she even said, "call me, dare I say it, tits." I mean, she wanted the whole.
Yeah.
She wanted the whole bit of sexist whatever. It was just, I'm not used to that. I'm not used to being disrespectful to people. But in any event.
Is that overcompensating? I don't know, that Nikki was talking about in the interview. I don't know.
I don't know. All I know is this.
It's a way of processing it for.
Yeah. Robin and I had a conversation, and I'm not. I am a lot like you, Darlene, is that I will be very frank. I don't understand. I don't. And I told this to Robin. I said, hey, I don't understand, but the more important thing is that I support you. Whether or not I understand, or
it's
irrelevant.
It's not surprising people would have a hard time understanding because the person it's happening to struggles to understand. Steve,
sure, no,
it's painful.
But
yeah.
But the bottom line is I want Darlene to understand that. While we may be in different places in terms of, what's the word I want? I don't know what the hell the word is. The bottom line is, whether or not I understand is not the issue. The issue is, it's fucking hard. Because I've known a number of trans folks. And even after that, I don't understand it. And I've had conversations with a very good friend of mine who is a late 70s gay man in New York, and he was part of the Pride Parade back when they first started. So he's been a part of, you know, back when it was called, as he called it, gay liberation.
Yep. Yeah, I remember that term. Right. Well, let me just add in something for consideration here. Go ahead.
But the bottom line is, whether or not I understand is not the issue. The issue is, look, this is what makes you comfortable in your skin. And the most important thing is this, is that I support you in that. Me understanding is not the issue. The issue is supporting you. And the issue is me being that person that when you get frustrated and when you get pissed off and you get feel insulted or you feel whatever, that I'm the person that I'm one of. I don't want to say I'm not obviously not the person. I'm one of the people that you can call, you can speak to, because it was similar for me coming out. What's important is that I'm that person that you can just vent to. You know, on any number of issues, sometimes you talk to people about things, you're not interested in hearing what they have to tell you. You're not interested in feedback. You're not interested in suggestions. You're interested in an ear.
Yeah, sometimes you just need to talk.
Tell you what, and honestly, that's all I am at this point.
Well, there's no such thing as that's all I am.
Okay.
That's a hell of a thing to be. Let me add another note. As I've told Rob, this email says, as I've told Robin a few times, not many other than the show know about me or who or what I consider myself. Yes, I live in Bernie's Vermont. Hate, fear, violence, and yes, even the KKK are real and here as well. So I often fear for my life if someone, the wrong person, found out. Even some of my lifelong friends I would hesitate to tell because of said things about and comments they've made on related issues. And people say things, and they don't know that they're saying it to someone that is the very people that they're hating on. A dear friend of mine reached out to me Sunday morning, I think. No, something like, yeah, maybe it was Sunday. And just apologized and said, I know I've said things around you, and now I know that I was hurting my friend, and I'm sorry, and I'm not going to be that way anymore. And I thought it was beautiful. But the other thing, the other thing I would just note, I'm sorry,
apologizing before I come beat the shit out of you.
Okay, I'm sorry. But
asked for it, man. You asked for it. You got it, dude.
What I've heard a couple of times is, and it's not a bad thing, I'm not calling it out, you know, I don't understand but I support. Well, there's two things at work here. One of them is support is so critically important because there is a gulf a mile wide between tolerance and acceptance. And
I was just going to say that to you. I don't mean tolerance.
Yeah, no, but that's not. I'm getting kind of at a larger point.
Okay. Just making sure you understand that's not what I mean.
Tolerance is what you do when you've got a thorn in your foot and you've got to walk another mile till you can get the goddamn thing out. You tolerate.
Or a boil on your ass. I get it.
Right, but let me add into this. As opposed to not understanding. And you don't have to understand my or any other trans person's existence. What's really important is understanding what society and culture does.
Exactly.
Relative to our existence. Because when you understand what society and culture does, you can take action to correct society and culture.
And like I told you, I've seen it.
Yeah.
Because I've known people, look, in New York, you get all kinds. you know? So
right. And it's not a criticism. Cynthia just wrote in from the Bay Area and said, how can someone even begin to understand when they don't ever experience it? Intellectually, they can try, but emotionally, they'll never have a clue.
Well, that's what
and
the
Jimmy, you know, yeah. Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, Darlene was shocked and surprised like a few of the Horn family were. And Cynthia added earlier, you handled it last Thursday as well as it can be handled. People aren't going to expect it. And some people will also need to go through mourning for the person they're losing, even as they're gaining a new person. I experienced all this stuff with people in my life when I came out, believe me.
Exactly.
And I don't like the idea of thinking of me as someone who was lost or is being lost. Because everything...
That's where I got hung up.
Yeah, everything that I've ever been has been because of who I am on the inside. And so much of it on the outside, I mean, one of my favorite examples is Ernest Hemingway. That poor soul. There are photographs of Ernest Hemingway standing next to his older sister at a summer camp in Petoskey, Michigan. And Hemingway's mother has dressed them both in little girls' dresses. And Grace Hemingway, his mother, titled that, you know, it's like summer 1903 Michigan summer girls. Okay. He spent a lifetime running away from that and never sufficiently got away. His fiction, as was his life. I mean, you can see the women with whom he associated himself. He liked women to look like little boys. And then if you read, for instance, the Islands in the Stream, there are three, he has three sons in there, just like he had three sons in real life. He was writing about his boys. And the youngest one, I think Gregory, turned out to be trans. And even though being a Hemingway and, you know, having all the money he could ever want was tormented all his life, tried to transition, tried to have surgery, had surgery, detransitioned, and just lived a hell of a life and died miserable.
Wasn't there a lot of suicides in his family? Oh,
suicide runs like a freaking river through that family. Hemingway's dad, Hemingway's brother, Hemingway. One of the kids.
Mariel? One of the Mariel. Yeah. And there was,
right, exactly. Yeah.
Was a model. One of them was a model, and she killed herself. It's interesting, Steve, because a dear gay friend of mine who lives in New York City, I went to a bar with him, a gay bar, and there was... I assume she was a drag queen. Maybe she was a trans. I don't know. This was many, 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 many years ago, and was performing. And my friend was just vicious towards this individual. And I was shocked because I felt so bad because it was clearly this drag queen, or maybe it was somebody who was transitioning. I really don't know, but it was clearly a man who was a woman. Was in pain, and you could hear in her voice, in the music, everything. And he was brutal. And I really was like, why would you be like this? You're gay. Why would you, you know, I was flummoxed by that. I really think that Robin has it correct when it's how I think gender is far more fluid than we realize and that we're willing to admit to ourselves because of how we've been acculturated. The culture in the society is extremely powerful. So the strides that the LGBTQ community have made in the last decade has been enormous. You're further along than women in terms of the Equal Rights Amendment. You know, we still haven't gotten parity there. So,
Yeah, and consider probably the funniest thing in all of Western culture from the time of the Greek theater to the present. Remember, women were never actually in Shakespeare's England nor in Greece were women allowed to play roles on stage because the gods did not appreciate it. But from the time of the ancient Greeks forward, gender jokes, and particularly a man in a dress, is just the funniest damn thing anybody has ever seen. And it has to be mocked. And it has to be derided. Because it is intolerable to the power structure. You know, one of the most powerful anti-war pieces of art in Western culture is a comedy, a Greek comedy called Asistrata. And it was funny because the women take, there's a war raging between Athens and Sparta, and women are fucking sick of it. And so the plot of Lysistrata is that the women of Sparta and the women of Athens agree that they're not going to give it up to any of the men until they end the war. And so you've got, you know, it's really broad comedy. You've got, I mean, the Greeks went out on stage with huge propped up fat strap on phalluses. I mean, nobody loved a dick joke like the Greeks and the Romans. And that need to find fun in the idea of not being locked in gender expression is how it's part of how we reinforce it. You know, Dustin Hoffman won an Academy Award for Tootsie. And Tootsie was just hilarious.
Oh, I love that movie.
And he was lovable as Tootsie.
And
Dorothy.
And good God, Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. Patrick Swayze as Miss Vita Boheme. And Wesley Snipes as Noxzema Jones. And John Leguizamo and John Leguizamo as Chichi Rodriguez.
I gotta tell you, I thought, I'm sorry to interrupt, but John Leguizamo and I thought Patrick Swayze looked good. Wesley Snipes, I'm sorry, you know, not everyone can be good at everything, and that's the one thing that he was not very good at.
Easy there, Tiger.
Listen, Toots. Okay, see but, now.
I will say ultimately, and this is like the ultimate, you know, this is the pinnacle of things in that, and this is where my surrogate mom in Canada, you know, completely, like, you know, agreed and slammed me. I said, you know, Robin does not need my approval on any of this. And she said, you're damn straight that she doesn't. And that's the bottom line, is that we tend to want to seek, like, this society teaches us to seek others' approval to a point where it's to our detriment. And it, you know, the whole idea really is we're put on this planet, I think, ultimately to self-actualize, you know, and to be who we are. And,
we're not just here to consume things. There's a line from a song that Mac McAnally wrote, called It's My Job. Jimmy Buffett recorded it. And he's a fantastic lyricist, Mac McAnally is. And he sings, I was told my purpose in life was to eat and excrete and die. And man, if that is the purpose of humanity, then what's the goddamn point?
What's the point?
Yeah,
point?
Just pack it in if that's it. Just pack it in.
Right.
Don't even try.
Right, but if you're fortunate to have those supports, like Steve was saying, you know, those supports and stuff, that's which you do have in Terry and Nikki, and I'm sure others. That's really good because you could hear it in your voice, that liberated feeling, and you've been through a lot of pain. I mean, I could see it in that interview, and I needed the backstory. I need to understand because you know, I've been listening to the program for 10 years. I just never saw this coming in a billion years.
And you know, when Nikki told her story when Nikki told her story of having gone through not only conversion therapy, but electroshock therapy.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah.
Horrible.
And who knows what would have happened to me if I had tried when I was a kid. I mean, you know, there were so many things that I think people of that era just tried to look away from. You know, like I said, the words PTSD didn't exist, but I'm convinced at this point in time that my father was up to his eyeballs in it. And probably not just from World War II in the Navy, but from the mines. You know, dysfunction in these mining communities is legendary. Violence, substance abuse, you know, the works. Let me share with you a couple of notes that have come in. Libby says, my thoughts on your transition, as long as you and Agnes and family are good too, mainly you being better in your own skin and being happier. With that said, feelings the same as Darlene. It blew my mind. Looked up transvestites, transsexual difference, human psyche of great interest. I've known men to women, watched a few movies, smiley face, laughing. Hey, yeah, I've seen that, Tootsie. We do not need to understand it, but to accept all people for who they are. When it comes down to it, none of our business what sexual preferences any of us have. All the more interesting. Be well, dear Robin. Love, Libby. And thank you so much, Libby. And that's the other thing.
Thank you, Libby. That makes me feel, yeah.
Yeah, and
thanks,
I mean,
you, that's so true.
It's you were by no means alone. Okay. And you know, and there's a gulf between gender and sexuality. One thing does not equate with the other. And you know, there are people out there who get sexual kicks out of dressing as the opposite gender, and that's cool. You know, whatever, like what Joey was talking about last night, whatever gets you through the night, it's all right. But if it's not for a sexual thrill, then what the fuck is it? And that's where the idea of gender comes in. And it makes it, you know, it makes everything just a mess. And, you know, let me add one last thing, Darlene, if I may. It was not entirely out of the blue. And what I mean by that is a few years ago, and I know you were listening at the time when I talked about what I experienced as a child, I said something after that like, and I have had gender issues all my life. And so, you know, that far back, I was trying to inch my way forward. And right. And then, you know, then COVID kicked in.
I don't remember that part. I think I was so shocked at the story you were telling about your stepbrother. Yeah.
But then, you know, COVID kicked in, and it's like people are dying all over the place. And, you know, I got comorbidities. I don't want to die. I'm trying to do everything I can to be safe. But the big part of it was, you know, now you have to.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering if that factored in quite a bit too.
It played a role.
Allowed your hair to grow longer too, probably because you're not getting it cut, right?
I'm trying to give the magic medicine a chance to do something about my very my extremely dysphoric bald spot. Hopefully it'll do it.
I thought you said it was filling in, but
it is filling in, but it takes a long time.
Steve, I hear you breathing heavily. You okay over there?
Yeah.
Are you frustrated?
No. I'm working. I get rather annoyed at other lawyers when I work because they really begin to fucking piss me off. So
I've seen some of the law. And off topic, I've seen some of the lawyering that you deal with.
And exactly.
I said that to Darlene too. So
yeah, and I'd rule 11 against half the people you go up against.
Exactly. But Steve, you do a good job at showing how incompetent they are, though. So that's good on you.
I graded a motion or something and sent it back. It didn't go over well.
Got a note from Brother John here saying it's so good to talk about something other than Trump. Congratulations, Robin. Thank you, John. I hope I haven't run everybody else talking about that off talking about this, but you know, it's.
Well, thank you for hearing me out and being so patient and understanding, because I evolved in my shock in all of this, and I learned a lot, and as I've always learned a lot from you, and I think that. You know, this is a new facet to your program, and obviously, you know, that you can.
And I hope, you know, I hope we can be a welcoming space for anybody like me who wants to come in and join the conversation, because the whole idea has always been to create more community. And there's never been bookends or parameters or limits on who could participate or how or why. And I think that's why it has been as marginally successful as it has been. And let me just share something from the real world real quick. This via Dave number 11. The first precinct is in from Burke County. It's a rural county outside of Augusta. That's one of the ones that was going to be staying open a little bit later, like 4 minutes or something. Warnock, 534. Loeffler, 189. Ossoff, 536. Purdue, 187. And that's just a tiny percentage of the vote coming in, so it's nothing to get excited about. And
that's quite a gap, though. That's
yeah, but what Dave Wasserman said on Twitter is, it doesn't tell us much because it's a tiny share of the county's vote, but it tells us don't expect much divergence between these two races. 536, 187, 534, 189. So they'll probably both come down to 49.5 or 50.5 to 49.5 or something like that. And at that point in time, and I hate to mention this, but any Southern race, I will always say the same thing. Because I'm convinced it's true. I'm no data scientist. I'm not a data nerd like Steve. But you know, we saw this in Florida, the way that Andrew Gillum got robbed. In a Southern state, the high motivation of racists, Klansmen, neo-Nazis, and that ilk, white citizens' councils, cannot be discounted and must always be factored in as the possible game changer. I don't think you can get away from that, and it just has to be dealt with. And by the way, I've largely kept my mouth shut for quite a while, but we got $5 to go on the Fuck 2020 Kick It to the Curb Challenge, courtesy of Billable Rick, and then $53 to go on Dave and the Blinds challenge, and that would get us to within $75 of being done with this evening, and that would be awesome if we can raise $58 in the next 7 minutes. Sorry, I didn't mention it earlier. That's on me. But you know, this is also meaningful, and I don't want to work Terry and Nikki's corner. Okay.
Right.
It's kind of like I've spent more time than any other broadcaster on earth talking about mountaintop removal, but this is not a mountain.
Which I also learned from you. I didn't know anything about it until I started listening to your program.
A lot of people did, frankly. But I've never wanted this to be a mountaintop removal program or even an environmental program. It has to be, you know, it has to be broad in scope and long in range. Oh, okay. Wait a minute.
Well,
Jeremy,
be a mutual.
But right. That's the whole idea is making, is
she
being inclusive.
She posted your link in the comments. Terry did. So, you know, I don't necessarily see it as competitive. I see it as a mutual.
No. It's just that's what they are really good at. They've got years and years and years and years of experience. And I got next to none.
So it would be very presumptuous of me to run out and be some sort of freaking oracle on transness. The one thing
you gotta get Terry back in here for, you know, the geology.
No, we really will talk. We really will talk geology. We're gonna talk a lot.
Yeah, that was a shitty bait switch. Just saying. Geology, cool. I'm gonna switch to transgenderish. I'm like, what? Where are we going with this? Anyway.
Well, see, that was the conundrum, because I was.
You needed to do it that way, though.
Well, it kind of had to be done that way, Darlene.
Because,
well, not just that, but because we have a history. And it's hard to explain that this woman that you're talking to on the radio, you became good friends standing on the football field.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
I
laughed when she said that first day of football practice. I thought, he has got the whitest legs I have ever seen in my life.
Like translucent.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like what they used to say.
Translucent. Okay. That's a Geoffrey thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like what they used to say about the women of Spanish nobility, that they were so pale that you could see when they drank red wine, you could see it going down their throat. I've never quite gotten to that, but yeah, don't do it. No melanin. Okay. Jeremy tells me the fuck 2020 was killed off a couple of hours back. So that makes me wonder if maybe I'm not getting PayPal notifications again. Let me check.
Or maybe it's confirming your ciphering skills are as bad as you always thought they were.
Okay. Yeah.
By the way, I'm looking at some returns on CNN. I don't know where these are coming from, but it looks, when I look at the returns from the map of the state, they seem to be fairly uniform, but I mean, who knows? The Loeffler race is 51-46. Warnock and the Purdue is 53-47. Ossoff.
Yeah, expect
the
numbers to shift.
Oh, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I usually get worried, but
I actually have a decent feeling. I frankly think that one of the biggest factors is that shitbag, depressed the vote because he's got his troop of monkeys.
He was an hour and a half.
Bob, what the hell was? Excuse me. What the hell? Fucking what was that?
Like I said, I've watched a bajillion of them, and that was. I mean, Captain Queeg had the steel balls in his hand and had finally sorted out the problem with the strawberries. He harangutanged for an hour and a half, I think, before he even mentioned that anybody was in an election.
I mean, and you know what? And if you heard that parts of that phone call too, you know, I kept hearing parts. I listened to parts of it, and I thought they kept repeating it, and I was like. No, he just kept. No,
I did the same thing. I kept having to look down in the corner at the timestamp, and it was like, yep, that's the same as what's on the. I'll be damned.
That's the same. Yeah. No.
And Agnes hollered a couple of times. Are they just rerunning it now? That's live.
It's like he had a script and he just kept reading, you know, lines 10 through 15 the entire time.
I mean, I was beginning to wonder if he was getting, if it was some sort of weird ass aphasia where he couldn't, you know, he couldn't get to the next page of the script.
But you have, I mean, that, did you hear much of it, Darlene? It was just, I was nobody's honestly surprised, are they?
No. No. Did you see, speaking of CNN, that attorney, that I don't know if I'm pronouncing her first name right, Cleta?
Yeah, Cleta. Cleta.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the female version of Cletus.
We can't.
She is, she's the one that wants to try to push to have all the Senate races be selected by the legislatures. Apparently, her law firm, gave her the heave ho.
Robin was talking about that earlier.
Oh, okay. I must have missed that.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, she resigned, and that was mm-hmm. one of those. Yeah, Cleta, you're going to resign, or it's going to get real embarrassing real fast.
Oh, resigned. Yeah, it says resigned. They were concerned.
Yeah.
Fully and larger.
Like Nixon resigned. I guarantee you the partners looked at her, look, you either resign or we're not going to just make you walk the plank. We're going to push you off.
Good.
And here's the latest.
Good. There needs to be some consequences.
Here's the early returns from CNN with 20% counted. Warnock, and this is courtesy of Billable Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Warnock, 453,483 votes. That's 53.1. Offler, Waffler, Loffler, 401,233. That's 46.9%. Ossoff, 451,136, 52.8%. Purdue, 403,627, 47.2%. So Dave Wasserman's observation holds true. The numbers aren't going to be broadly different between these two races. I think it's going to be we're either going to get both or we're going to get none.
Now, do they do things in Georgia like they do here in Connecticut? I mean, usually the the rural areas come in first.
That's what I was about to say. I imagine the urban areas, the cities probably came in first because. You don't, at least in a place like Georgia, you don't have to hitch old Dobbin to the Shay and carry the big barrels of votes down to the county seat.
You don't have to get the hamster on the thing. No, but you know what? They have a map there. If you look at the CNN website, they have a map of where returns have come in. And that's – I said that. I was a little surprised. It seems to be fairly uniform in terms of where they have returns coming in from. That's why – You know, it just seems, you know.
And the fact that, you know, did you notice where he held that Klan rally last night?
Where did he hold it?
It was in Dalton, Georgia. Dalton is to the northwest of Atlanta. And it's up in, serious white people country. It's burned with COVID. But I think that might also be up in the same neck of the woods that elected Marjorie Taylor Greene. Maybe, I mean, you know, I don't know where that district is, but something makes me think that it is. Steve can give me a correction if I'm off.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at that map, too. And, yeah, Columbus, Valdosta, the greater Atlanta area is going to be blue, 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 blue. It'll be weird to see how Athens votes because Athens is the home of the University of Georgia, and usually hip little college towns tend to vote more Democratic, but that's not necessarily the case in a place like Athens. So that'll be interesting.
Athens is a city, I assume.
Yeah, Athens is
Athens, Georgia.
So we're looking at 4.3 and 4.6 percentage point difference right now.
Right.
At the cities for the urban areas. So if you get into the rural areas, I guess that's going to tighten up pretty seriously.
But I don't know why. I almost wish I didn't. But I actually have a fairly my hunch is fairly optimistic.
That's my hope. So again, I know you've talked about this in the program, but I've missed it. If it's 50-50, Senate controls 50-50.
Yeah.
Then who's majority leader?
The Democrat.
Okay, let me get. Okay, this is a good time for me to go back to something that Lee in New York sent a little bit ago, because Lee had a question about what you and I had been talking about relative to the president of the Senate.
Oh, by the way, I need to step off. Okay, I gotta.
Bye, Steve. Thanks.
But I just wanted to come in and you guys were making me look way too good, and I was like, that just can't stand.
Yeah, from the guy who won't let me say I'm sorry. Right, gotcha.
Yeah, listen.
Thanks.
No, I won't
support,
let you say
Steve.
That. I won't let you say that.
Oh no, it was Flavio. It was Flavio who sent it along. The Vice President of the United States shall be President of the Senate, but shall have no vote unless they be equally divided. That's from Article 1, Section 3, Clause 4. The President, the Vice President, yada, yada, yada. That's all the Constitution says about the VP. What am I missing? Well, what you're missing, Flavio, is the Vice President shall be the President of the Senate. That's not may, that's shall. And so the only thing, and yes, the Vice President only gets a vote to break a tie, but shall be President of the Senate is, you know, it's not fluid. It is only by operation of tradition that the Vice President is, that there is a Senate Majority Leader. That is purely delegated authority solely for the sake of the convenience of, and at that time it was the convenience of the presidency, which was of the same party as the majority of the Senate. And if you go and read Who's Afraid of Mitch McConnell, what you'll find is that, you know, Vice President Harris can exercise that authority whether she has a majority or not.
Because it's her body.
Yeah.
I mean, and by
her
body.
It's her body. Wow. Okay, yeah. I like that.
Her body, her body, her choice, by
her
God.
Choice. Oh.
That's awesome. So she can select, if it's
50-50. One last thing. And in answer to Flavio's question, a lot of people are asking, you know, what power does Pence have? Where does this come from? That's not from the Constitution. You have to look at Title 3, Section 15 of the U.S. Code, where it talks in there about the procedure. And here's the procedure. Number one, if there was an objection, there has to be a Senate objection and a House objection. If that's the case, and they go debate it, and then they have to, then they vote on whether or not to accept those electors. And it has to be both houses, and it says in there concurrently. So both houses have to agree to reject those electors before they reject those electors. It has nothing to do with the Vice President being able to do anything.
He can't drive the process. He merely presides.
It's not like he's not like, you know, he's not like the he's not the Camerlengo is the term is used in Vatican politics that kind of presides over a conclave. He is there to make sure order happens and make sure they're counted. He doesn't have any decisional power. So this bullshit from Charlie Kirk and all these cock knockers, it's blather. It's people, you know, continuing wanting to fillate Trump. It's all about money. It's all about money, and whatever, and people who don't want to piss off, you know, little baby Donnie. That's all this is. So, and if you want to look, I actually posted it on Facebook in my Facebook or somewhere. I cut and pasted the statute. It's actually a very poorly written statute, but if you dissect it out, you'll see what exactly, you know, needs to happen. And it ain't going to happen with the House, with the Democrats controlling the House. Period.
Right. I mean, even if the Senate decided, they would not have the concurrence that they need in the House.
This is nothing more. You know, it's going to take longer. I mean, you can bet that I think there's five or six states that they've said they're going to object to, and they'll have to do the 2-hour debate for each state. So that's another 12 hours. Hopefully at one point some of them might go, you know what, this really isn't going anywhere, but keeping us here. They're not smart enough to do that. So it's going to be. Whereas this is something that normally is done, you know, they start in the morning and it's done by noon. We probably won't get the formal count until late tomorrow evening or maybe even into Thursday.
Yeah, but it's not going to be any sometime next week business.
No. And this, you know, that fucker from, who's that Trump guy who says, oh, we can delay it for 10 days. No, you can't. Sorry, you can't.
That's quite ironic. I just find it ironic that we're in the enviable position again of having, you know, having this country, like this country moving forward again rests, it seemingly, on one southern state.
But you know what, it's Darlene? Like
back to Florida, you know, with Bush v. Gore, and here we are again.
Here's the deal. And here's the deal. They're the ones who are they're the ones who are the true constitutionalists and true Americans. The ones who want a president to declare martial law and bring the military in. They're the ones who are so into the Constitution. Fuck them. We need to let them wear this. We need to let them, you know, this needs to be their albatross, or the albatross around their neck. And this tying Trump to the GOP needs to happen. Will it? Are the Democrats good enough? No, but that's what needs to happen. This oh, well, he's an anomaly. He isn't.
Oh, no. That's why I like to see them sweat a little bit and have Democrats come back full force and say, oh, okay, we need to get rid of the Electoral College altogether. There's obviously too many problems
And for years, I've said, will someone please introduce the necessary constitutional amendment?
And you know what? They need to frame it the right way. And the way they frame it is, so, we're trying to make one person, one vote. Who's against that? Let the GOP and the small states say, oh, we're against one person, one vote. We want to have more of a
say. That's all that introductory line. You know, whereas one person, one vote should and will be the operative philosophy behind the franchise in the United States, yada, yada,
absolutely.
Yada. Right.
100%. And make them say, no, we don't want one person, one vote.
Oh, and by the way, here's a blast. I just had a note from Ralphs. My parents' lawyers used to work at Foley and Lardner, which is where where Cleta came from.
Yeah.
Can I just is that not the, wow. Is that not the perfect name? And I'm sorry to be this way.
Well, we got to be careful about using that name, because every time we do, a certain lovely little puppy in Georgia loses her mind.
Okay. I'm gonna make a motion for an exception here. And I hope I get a second somewhere in the Horn Parliament. But you got to admit, was that not perfect? You can't tell me that you didn't chuckle.
I did. Yeah, second. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes.
Or you went, oh my God, the goddess of irony. There she is. She does not miss a beat.
Yeah. It's like those two things that I point out. You know, the goddess of irony has been playing with me all her life. And, you know, age 15, getting invited to participate in Alabama's Junior Miss because of my first name. And then getting my certificate suitable for framing from the state of West Virginia. Her having demonstrated her ability.
Her ability.
She is hereby. There was a her and a she. I got both. The state of West Virginia got my pronouns right about 27 years before I did.
And at this point, the goddess was saying, what the fuck else do I have to do?
Right.
I mean,
speaking of women really quick, Tanya Roberts really did die this time.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I know. Oh, geez.
Did you see that?
She was only 65, too, which is kind of sad. But, yeah, she really did die this time, which is sad. But, anyway.
Yeah,
my two good folks. Yeah, pretty
much. I am going to step off. And you will have your beer as soon as I get the shipment.
Yeah, where's my beer?
I know.
I want my beer, man.
And you, Robin, I have what I'm getting you. I just, you know, with the whole crap with my now former roommate with the strangling and all that, I had a priority to get out of there. And
sweat thou it not.
That's fine. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Yeah. I'll hold off on eating the cashew bark.
Have you tried it?
Really, really. Huh? No, I haven't had it. I'm waiting for the beer. I'm waiting for the beer. I'm going to have it with the beer.
Now you made me feel guilty.
But don't, no pressure. No pressure. No, okay. I'm like literally like I'm taking nibbles of the last package of the Esther Price sea salt dark chocolate caramel.
Were those good? The caramels?
Oh, they're so good. And I'm like taking little nibbles and like I think I'm down to maybe six or something. So like I'm really trying to taste it. Yeah. They're very good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, their candy is
and
really
I have not
good.
It's good and I haven't even taken the wrapping off of the bark you gave me. So no, I'm waiting. I'll wait for the beer, but don't no pressure. Okay. In due time it'll come when it's messed up.
Okay. And the person who has the chartreuse, I apologize. Haven't forgotten. I just got preoccupied with this other shit.
And get, okay, more, right. What I said earlier about maybe the tide turning in terms of the court's willingness to look at to countenance this horse shit. Breaking news courtesy of Ralphs. The city of Detroit has just asked a federal judge to refer Sidney Powell and Lynn Wood for disbarment.
Oh!
Yes! Good.
Good deal. Well, we need terrific. To refer Cleta to the DC Bar Association. I think I might just file a complaint about her.
Ah, interesting. That firm is based in DC.
Oh, but I mean that's where she practices, so that's she must have at least a license.
Well, it's a national law firm. I was just wondering where it's.
Yeah. Yeah. One last question. Or one last thing, 37% in, Warnock 55.7, 44.3 for Loeffler. 37% in, Ossoff 55.2, Purdue 44.8.
I will probably turn on MSNBC to watch, you know, the Steve Kornacki do his thing.
I have to say, I'm really worried if the Democrats take both of these, I think you can count on violence.
I knew that's where you were going, Steve, and you should know that in D.C. tonight, the maggots are chanting victory or death.
Whoa. Ooh. Well, they're going to be – well, like, look, D.C. has some of the toughest gun laws in the country, so that's why they disarmed that asshole that was carrying the ammunition there from the Proud Boys.
It's Blut und Ehre. You know what that is, right?
Blut
und Ehre was the – I believe it was the SS motto in Germany, which means blood and honor.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
How does anyone not look at this and see these aren't parallels? These are equivalents. Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I love you both. I love you like my luck.
Likewise. I'll sign off too there, Robin. It's well after.
It has been an absolutely delightful conversation.
Likewise.
I'm just so sorry that you were upset. Like I said, I worried when I didn't hear from you. And I'm like, oh Jesus! Yeah.
And I needed to process it. I just had to process
and that's why
it.
And that's why Agnes was back here, holding my hand and patting my head.
Oh, I know, I know. That was even tougher for you. So it's. But thank you for everything.
I gotta give another shout out to her. She's.
Absolutely.
She's been quite a I don't even know what you call. She's been kind of an anchor and a stalwart and a rock in this.
Oh, in that in so many ways. This program.
And you know what?
This program doesn't happen otherwise.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, you're lucky to have somebody right there to give you the support. I mean, it's not easy. It's hard enough, but to have then you have somebody there to kind of lean on. All 6 foot two worth against a 5 foot six woman. So,
dynamite comes in small packages.
Oh hell yeah,
it does.
So you just keep trucking.
And the bottle of chartreuse, Harold, our buddy Harold, the president and CEO of Sostris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, says, "Tell Steve no worries."
I kept the styrofoam cooler that Esther Price came in for me. So I've, you know, I'm, it's in prep, it's in preparation.
You're repurposing.
Just, yeah.
And just before we head out the door, Roger just posted in the chat room, 40% Ossoff 55.5 to 44.5, for Perfidu, and Warnock 55.8 to 44.2 for Offler Waffler, Loffler.
Yeah, those are significant spreads, 10 and 11% I'm seeing on MSNBC here for now.
Right, and if it stays that way up into the 60 or 70% area, then there's a fighting chance that it's going to hold.
Yeah, we have. Yeah. And you know what I really hope tomorrow? I hope we come onto the program tomorrow to talk about a democratically controlled Senate. So I'm not going to.
It'll be an absolute delight. And, well, no, by tomorrow we'll be talking about whether, you know, what happened in D.C. But, yeah, tomorrow we hopefully talk about the possibility that Kamala Harris can make Mitch McConnell cry the same way that she made Bill Pepe the Frog Bar cry.
Oh, can I just tell you, and Mr. Beer,
Brat.
Yeah, yeah, Mr. Beer. Okay, or Mr. Suds. Anyway, I'm gonna go. You all take care. All right. Have a great evening, and we will speak and listen on the flip side.
Sounds fantastic.
Definitely.
Take care.
Awesome.
Bye.
All right, see you, Steve.
Robin, I'm gonna get going too, so you can wrap up.
It was wonderful, Darlene. Oh, thank you, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Okay, definitely. Take care.
Bye. And so here we are at the end of the program. If anyone would like to jump in and help finish off fundraising, we got $53 to go to finish Dave and the Blinds challenge that was set for end of showtime. And after that, if that's met, we will have about another $75 to go to finish the whole day's fundraising. So thank you. Steve just sent that intention out into the universe. Let it be, says Jude. Thank you, Jude. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal, our a la carte contributors who are all partial sponsors of the program and with your kind gifts keep the program on the air. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Brand new Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The best place to listen to Malloy in the first run is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. I was just chatting with John a couple of minutes ago, and we're going to be reworking. You know, he's the voice on the show intro. We're going to be reworking that intro for the first time in a very long time, for obvious reasons. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Keep healing, keep feeling better, my friend. Just keep getting better. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. The best way to stay safe is to stay home. If you can't stay home and you have to be out and about, please wear the best mask that you can. Please wash your hands frequently. Please don't touch your face. Please wear your gloves. Please use your hand sanitizer liberally. And maintain your social distance. Remember what Paul from Parts Unknown said. 10 feet between people wearing masks, and if somebody isn't wearing a mask, you can't get far enough away from them. And, of course, if somebody comes toward you saying, "Victory or death!" Avoid that person like the plague, because they are.
Later, y'all.